Hussein. Also welcome to Honorable Thuli and his team from Limpopo. They traveled very far to come here. Thank you for the rain you brought with, and the Northern Cape as well. Honorable McJack and his team, yes, you're always welcome in our meetings, and to also strengthen the ties. Also to Mrs. Gerekwa from the National Treasury. Honorable members, there's two apologies. The one is for Honorable Motara. She's attending a SADC meeting. And the other one is for Honorable Isaac. Honorable Motara from Gauteng and Honorable Isaac from Mpumalanga. We also recognize Honorable Motla Shuping that just entered the meeting room. Can we accept the apologies? Can I get an indication? We don't want to accept it. Thank you. A seconder. Thank you. Apologies accepted. Treasury, honorable members, here's the document. Mrs. Gerekwa, I'm going to give you 30 minutes to take us through. I consulted you. You said 30 is enough. To the two provinces, the figures we're going to see now in the Treasury presentation. You've got figures in your presentation as well, the presentations. We don't want to repeat everything in the second round when the provinces engage with us. If there's any differences in the figures, then you must just highlight that. Let me go deeper into your fiscal position, economic growth, what are you doing to address unauthorized, wasteful, fruitless, irregular expenditure. It's a bit high in some cases. What's happening about that? Because we must report not only to Parliament, we must report to the people outside. Thank you, Mrs. Gerekwa. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, MECs, HODs, colleagues. In the second slide, we talk about the provincial adjustment. We're going to look at how the budgets of the two provinces were adjusted. If you look at Limpopo, the highlighted line, we see that Limpopo did receive additional funding in terms of Division of Revenue Act that was added for the conditional grant comprehensive HIV AIDS to deal with issues, I think, around malaria in that province. Also, there were other gazettes that was money that were gazetted. The first one was the stopping and reallocation of the Human Settlement Development Grant, where in the case Limpopo lost 150 million during the stopping and reallocation. But also there was conversion of the school backlog grant, where they benefited from almost 82 million from that grant. With regards to Northern Cape, in their case, they benefited from the stopping and reallocation. They got 100 million from the Human Settlement Development Grant. So we'll see that in total, Limpopo adjusted their budget at 1.1 billion and underspent by 829 million at the end of the financial year. In the case of Northern Cape, the total adjustments were 680 million and they underspent by 211 million at the end of the financial year. But if you look at the bottom table where the money went, we'll see that in both cases, the bulk, in the case of Limpopo, the bulk went to health, education, and then public works, roads and transport, and also other departments. In the case of Northern Cape, the bulk went to health also, and even in their case, went to public works, roads. And because they got money for human settlement, in that case also they got money went there. In terms of economic classification, we see the efforts of Limpopo to deal with the high COE ratio that they did reduce the COE because they've been having that strategy to reduce. So we see that during adjustment, they reduced the compensation budget by 350 million. And then because there was pressure on the goods and services, we see that money went to goods and services and also transfers in their case and capital for assets. In the case of Northern Cape, there was a little bit of addition in compensation. The bulk went to goods and services and also payments for capital assets. The next slide, we look at the expenditure. As at the end of the financial year, we know that both provinces, they spent 98.7% of their budget, and I've already indicated that they underspend by 829 million and then 212 for Northern Cape. But if you look at the graph bottom there, we see that there's that difference in terms of how they spend the money. You see that in the case of Limpopo, the COE share is still high, but it's less than what they budgeted because it, I think they were budgeting around 70, but at least it's because of the reduction, they continuously take it down to, it's at 69%. But I think the difference that you will see is that because Northern Cape, their share is at, the compensation is at 56%, now they're able to have room to buy the goods that are needed. If you can see that they spend more money in capital when compared to Limpopo, and also they spend more money on goods and services when compared to Limpopo. But in terms of transfers and subsidies, Limpopo spent 13% in their case. So you can see the difference between how the composition of the budget for both provinces in those slides. The next slide is on education. In aggregate, education takes 41%, but we'll see in the next coming slide that it will differ from one province to another. As you can see that in, as much as on average is 41%, but in terms of Limpopo, the share of education of the total provincial budget is at 46.7%, while of that Northern Cape in the education is at 36.3%. Limpopo education, they underspend by 199 million. In the case of Northern Cape, they've been having a pressure for, I think it's about the second year now. They've overspent this time around by 110 million. And we see that in Limpopo, when you look at education sector, total social services, almost 60% of the social services budget is spent on education in comparison to Northern Cape, which spend 52.6% of their budget in education. In the next slide, we look at compensation of employees. Both provinces, they did overspend a little bit, but if you see that Limpopo, actually they were almost on point in the sense that they reduced their compensation budget by 177. So they only took 30 million more, but I think they were on the right track by reducing because seems like they knew that their budget is kind of bloated. So in the case of Northern Cape, despite the increase, because they did get 52 million during the adjustment, but they did overspend by 98.8%. And the bottom slide does show the bottom graph just shows the how the composition of budget within education to say. On average, education sector spends 79%, but if you look at Northern Cape, they spend 77% of their budget on COE, and then 8% on transfers and 8% payments for capital assets. So because Limpopo spent 80% of their budget on COE, now their payment for capital payments for capital assets is less than the average at 4%. So it just shows that these efforts, they need really to continue with it of continuously making sure that if there are efficiencies within COE, they do that so that they can be able to free up some money for other service delivering items. Now, when you look at the LKSM preliminary expenditure, there was that underspending, but in the case of Limpopo, they spent 98.2%. In the case of Northern Cape, they're one of the provinces that spent low at 81.5%. And if you see Limpopo, the bottom graph is that they've been continuously increasing their spending on LTSM so that there is enough coverage, because previously there's been complaints that there's a problem with textbook coverage. So over the years, they've tried to make sure that each learner has enough books. So another Cape, in that case, their trend has not been that consistent. It seems like probably this year, even though they didn't spend much, maybe they were topping up a bit because the spending is higher than what they spent in 2016-17. Looking at the education throughput pass rate, even though Limpopo tends not to do that well at the end of the year in terms of metric in aggregate, but if you look at the throughput rate, pass rate from those learners who were in grade 2 in 2007, 40% of them were in metric in 2017, so which is even above average, which means they at least they are able to retain learners up to metric. So, but if you look at the grade 10s, they will have the same percentage with Northern Cape in terms of grade 10s. When learners were in grade 10 in 2015, only 32.7% of them were in metric in 2017. Looking at health expenditure now, both the provinces spend 98.7% of their budget in health, underspending by 236.6 in Limpopo and by 60 million in Northern Cape. So, but if you look at the bottom table, in the case of Limpopo, there were no at least payments on medical legal paid, according to the information that we have. But in the case of Northern Cape, also there's been a huge reduction. So, which is that it shows that the province is really handling this matter well. Next slide is about compensation of employees. In the case of Limpopo, there was an increase. In both cases, there was additional funding for COE in both provinces. But in the case of Northern Cape, it seems like the pressure is too big, because now, in spite of the additional funds during adjustment, they still overspent their compensation of employees. But you will see that if you look at the numbers, the graph below, you see that Northern Cape numbers with regards to medical doctors has been a slight increase. The nurses also numbers increased. Has maybe there is that direct correlation with that being under pressure, and also the numbers increasing. So there's been an increase in numbers comparing to 2016-17. So in the case of Limpopo, there's been a little bit of decline in the two categories here. Looking at the goods and services budget, looking at the medical supplies, the provinces, they understand this one. Also, Limpopo, a little bit underspent on medicine, but Northern Cape overspent on medicine by 39.5 million. The laboratory services, there was a huge pressure in Limpopo. They overspent by 59 million. In the case of Northern Cape, they underspent by 16.6%. But property rates has been an issue that is put the budget under pressure too, that both provinces, they did overspend this item. Looking at capital, in terms of Limpopo, they spent less than what they spent in 2016-17 this year. And the same applies to Northern Cape. Also, there's been that low spending in this regard. And the table below also just shows that there's been that low spending in comparison to 2016-17 in terms of payments for capital assets. Now, looking at what the money buys, particularly looking at the ideal clinic status, the first graph just shows that the number of facilities that were visited to determine the status where the inspections were conducted. But the middle graph is just shows the best performing districts in the country. And we'll see here that in the case of Limpopo, they've got two districts, Zwembe District, and also Capricorn District. But Northern Cape, in that case, they don't have any district that is on the top 10 in the country in terms of the ideal clinic status. Just below the bottom graph just shows that we don't have a lot of facilities, you can call them, that are on platinum, which is at the best top. So I think all provinces need to work hard to ensure that we move from silver and maybe be between just gold and platinum. In terms of conditional grants spending, Limpopo spent 96.7% of their total conditional grants. In the case of Northern Cape, 96.8%, so they almost spent at the same rate. We just see that there were a few grants where both provinces spent less than 90%, including your land care, poverty relief, and infrastructure. Also in the case of Northern Cape, it's the Community Library Services, Learners of Profound Intellectual Disability Grant, but this one, most of the provinces did not do well because it was a new grant, so there were challenges, but I hope that they will do well in the next coming financial year. In terms of the human settlement, that's where there was stopping and reallocation, where it's clear that Limpopo lost 150 million, but they did get a rollover of 84.9 because by the time the rollover was approved, there were commitments for that, and they did spend the entire budget after that 150 reduction. In the case of Northern Cape, they received 100 million and 8.9 million of rollovers, but they didn't manage to spend the entire, I think, 100 million because the spend by 32.7. We'll assume that it was from the additional funds they received. In terms of the performance now on the targets, Limpopo did not do well on the site services. If you look at the target set and what was delivered. So if you look at the target set, that set, the site services, it was at 5,151, but only 3,064 sites were serviced. So only 59.5% of the targets were met. In terms of housing units, it was only 90.5%. In the case of Northern Cape, they overachieved on the site service, but in terms of the housing units, they were much lower at 61.3%. So in essence, there's not it would seem like much there was a need to service more sites than to build houses in this case. So, but I'm sure the province can explain that. The next slide just shows the information that we just showed, that there was that in some instances underachievement. In the case of Limpopo, is the site service, and in the case of Northern Cape, is the housing units. And the bottom graph just shows that because Limpopo did get as much as they lost 150 million, but because we gave them 84.8 million rollover, that's why it seems like their reduction was only 65 million. And then Northern Cape, they got the additional funds plus the rollover in their case. Quickly looking at Limpopo, I won't be long now. It's just to show that the issues with the projections, that at the third quarter, despite the adjustment two departments of project to overspend, but at the end of the year, all departments underspend. So including that, compensation and goods were also projected to be overspent, but at the end of the financial year, both items were underspent. So the only one that was overspent is the transfers. And looking at education, in the third quarter, the pressure indeed was on infrastructure development, but they did receive additional funding of 298 million to deal with the pressure. So the pressure was only in that regard. With regard to health, in the third quarter, they were projecting to overspend mostly on district health services, and there were certain areas like your medicine and property payments where they were projecting to overspend with big margins, and laboratory services. Some of those project overspend did materialize, like property payments, also laboratory services. So they had significant pressure, which we'll see that partly it was because of the accruals that were there. In terms of compensation, there was underspending, and there's been an issue of high attrition in the case of health professionals in the province. With regards to infrastructure quickly, so in the case of education and health, they had allocated their majority of the budget for upgrades and additions, which is what I think is being advocated, that most money must at least even go to maintenance instead of just going to make sure that the existing facilities are in good conditions and not just invest in new infrastructure. So the project underspending of 1.5 billion mostly contributed by public works roads and infrastructure at the end of the financial year. So in terms of what are the issues, the major risk in the departments is higher accruals, particularly in health, that we see that the increase from 775 in 2015-16 to 1 billion, which increased by 35.5%. And also the issue of high composition of the budget is mainly around COE, which puts pressure on goods and services we have seen. So the issue of gatekeeping, because you see that also the laboratory services have been under pressure. So there could be more savings if there is gatekeeping within the department with regards to laboratory services. Also, the issues around inefficiency with regards to management of committed overtime and seasonal doctors. Medical legal has not been that bad, but obviously the liability is also growing. The issue of high levels of irregular expenditure with regards to non-compliance with ACM legislation. With regards to education, mainly is the we are worried about the high attrition. However, there's still a problem with the excess educators. Also, inefficient systems for personnel and records management. So, but I know that the province has been trying to work on also, particularly around the issue of the e-leave system. So, the Department of Education did get a qualified audit opinion. So, there are also issues around the SCM unit that needs to that consistently delay procurement and challenges with the logistics. The department did accelerate infrastructure in the previous financial year. We are also worried about the corporate governance and human settlement because they lost 150 million, which they could have, assisted with building houses or servicing sites. So I think the issues of accruals, we have already spoken about them, and we'll see that for the 2017-18, they were at 1.44 billion. Yes, in this slide, we'll see that, which we got it from the province, that the bulk of the accruals, as much as health slightly underspent, but the accruals were sitting at, accruals and payables not recognized will be sitting at 983 million. Quickly on Northern Cape. Of all departments that projected to overspend, it was only in education where that overspending, because in the third quarter several departments were projected to overspend, but it only took place in education at 110, with the rest of the departments underspending. And almost all items were projected to overspend except payments for capital. And in most cases, those items have been overspent except for transfers and payments for capital assets. With regards to education, those programs that were projected to overspend, that overspending did take place, even on the items that they had pressures on. So it's only LTSM where there was that underspending. Health also projected to overspend, but in, at the end of the financial year, they underspend. But the pressure within central hospital services and district health services remain, even on administration, because they did overspend on administration. So the medicine, the property payments, the contractors, where mostly you will contract with specialists, also overspent, and compensation of employees. There were, I think, also challenges with regards to infrastructure delivery a bit. But the province has been prioritizing maintenance and repair of existing infrastructure, which is a good thing that we need to make sure that the existing infrastructure is maintained and is under good conditions. So at the end of the financial year, there was over expenditure of 17 million, mainly towards in roads and public works and agriculture. With regards to issues, health has been, there's been an issue of governance in that regard. There's been, at some point, there was Section 18. I'm not sure whether it's still in place because there is an HOD that was appointed, but also the contingent liability constantly increasing the medical legal claims. The accumulated and unauthorized expenditure at the end of 2016-17 was at 381 million. Accruals increased also, they were at 339, but we'll see the new figure in the next coming slide. So at the end of the financial year, the Department of Health had an overdraft of 338.8 million at the end of the financial year. So also the operationalization of new health facilities has been a challenge, like the new DR hospital that has been completed. Dr. Harrisuti has been completed for a while in Upington, but it was not fully operational. The new mental hospital also is expected to be completed this financial year. The Kimball Hospital has been upgraded to tertiary hospital and it currently provides certain tertiary services. Education has been struggling with personal expenditure, and we are saying that the department should improve its planning and budgeting for compensation of employees. With regards to social development, there was a substance abuse treatment that was completed, that was delayed, but I think was completed in the last financial year. So we're saying we're expecting to be operational in July 2018. With regards to infrastructure delivery, the province depends on IDQ to implement its infrastructure for education and health. Monitor of projects is a challenge. There's been termination of main contractors, which has been a concern. And the John Taolo Khaitso District challenge with the Dolomites, which contributed in projects taking longer time than expected. With regards to revenue, I think the province has done well. They've moved to from municipality services to the South African Post Office, which has yielded results. With regards to the cash management, we are saying it has, the management of cash has regressed, because now if you look at the province closed with an overdraft or a negative balance of 86.8 million. Irregular expenditures accumulated to 10.5 billion at the end of 2017-18. Accruals are at 1.4 billion and unauthorized at 903. So we'll see that in this coming slide. We see the irregular expenditure. It only slightly decreased in education, but I think the rest of the in health at least stayed constant, but in Cogstar it increased a bit, and also in public works. The next slide is only the accruals and payables. They also have increased from 1.1 to 1.2 in 2017-17, and then to 1.4 in 2017-18. At the end here, we recommended that the committee note the preliminary outcome for provincial expenditure of the two provinces for 2017-18 financial year, and note the risks, particularly in education and in health in both provinces, and also the issues of accruals, and that I think in some, because not all departments, some departments require that the capacity with regards to planning and better project execution should be solved, because we know, as the committee know, that particularly mental hospital has been in construction for many, many years. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mrs. Karekwa, the mental hospital. We were there last year, September, October, and then we were informed they will complete the work before the 15th of December, and I told the presenter, please don't name a date or mention a date to give him some advice. Just keep that one open. But what they did, the new contractors, was good work, what we saw. Yes. We went through the whole building. Are there any questions you want to put to Treasury? This is an overall picture of the two provinces. You can see the unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure is quite high. What is the action plan of the two provinces to address that?
Chair, I'm proposing that there was an overall picture, that we zoom into the province, because quite often the figure figures are not going to change. So we are dealing with this province, these two provinces. Perhaps we must hear from them so that we can deal with issues emanating from that.
Thank you. Mr. Monakedi, I show your hand.
I'm covered. That is.
Mr. Blanche, I show your hand. You're covered. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's very, very progressive, honourable members. In the letter sent to the provinces, we also indicated your reply to the recommendations of in our previous report of 2017 to address that. It will, in actual fact, also come up in your presentation, but you can give us specifics that will assist us, because we must report back to the NCOP in terms of this. It doesn't stop there. It's a continuous exercise. Honourable members, you also issued with the research document. Jabulile, thank you for your hard work, good work. This is your guidance, honourable members. Honourable Tuli, welcome. Share your best practices also with us. We are also here to learn from each other, like we did last year with Gauteng in a certain matter on health. Your whole issue of the compensation of employees, your Department of Education under Section 18 of the PFMA for how long? This is coming a long way out of the intervention that was terminated, but then the province decided to keep that department under Section 18 of the PFMA. The impact of the expenditure ceiling of 85 billion rand of the MTEF will affect every province. Yes. How are you managing to do that budgeting? In addressing the priorities, like the human settlements grant, that's a priority. People want housing, people want water, people want electricity, the basics. Obatuli, over to you. Yes. Oh, Northern Cape, I have the opposite, sorry. I've got this other relationship with the Popo out of the intervention. Sorry. To Northern Cape, this weekend I heard an announcement about Gamsberg. Gamsberg is in the Namakwa region, a very poor region. For the Northern Cape, what was announced over the radio, I was just filled with joy when I heard it, because it's good news. If you look at the own revenue of that province, just over 300 million rand, being carried by the National Treasury. So every cent must be spent wisely. Also, the Northern Cape Department of Health is under Section 18 of the PFMA because of certain reasons. What is the forecast? When will we get out of that? Uncle Jack, I'm glad you're here. You were not well. We wish you well, and we are listening to you. 40 minutes for your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I think you made a comprehensive introduction. I think some of the issues that you mentioned will just underline. It is my pleasure to introduce the team. We've got the acting head of department next to me, Mr. Tamim Mapija. And then we've got the PAG, Ms. Lavinia Bosfark, next to him. And then in front here, we've got Mr. Bakang Moya. Yeah. And then we've got, as part of the team, the Director for Fiscal Policy, that is Mr. Moya. And then, I hope I'm right, the Director and the Chief Director for Assets, Mr. Vermeulen. And then we've got Busi as one of our directors. Busi, they are sitting at the back there. I'm worried that the chair wants to know when I'm only mentioning the names of the women. Chairperson, I think I'll be emphasizing slides 6 and 5, 7. And I strongly believe it is just going to be proper for me when I introduce the issues of economic growth and development to mention the fact that if we want to ensure there's a theoretical aspect, if we want to ensure there's growth of the economy, there are three aspects that we consider: long-term planning, skills development, and SMME development. That is where we are concentrating on as a province because we want to grow our economy. On the other hand, if we want to ensure that our GDP is growing substantively, we need to export more, import less, and ensure there's infrastructural development. Those are theoretical aspects of economics. And that is where we are concentrating on. If you're looking at slide 6 and slide 7, I hope it hasn't changed. What we really do as a province we have undertaken to boost our provincial economy and employment through the process, a project called Oceans Economy, where we are having our major project, as you are saying, in our poorest district, which I believe if we can succeed in implementing it, it is going to be the richest region, and I'm sure the question of population will be affected and so on. We've got our deep sea harbor development. That's why we are all over the world trying to get and lure investors to come into our province. There's positivity in this regard, particularly from China and India. We hope and trust that during the BRICS summit that is going to be held in our country very soon, we are going to be finalizing this through the assistance of National Treasury, through the assistance of Provincial Treasury and Economic Development, and our Institution for Development, which is the agency NIDA. We are trying by all means to ensure that we get in. That is going to affect our unemployment rate. That is going to affect poverty. That is going to affect a barrage of other issues, which I believe will turn around our province. I think I need, it's worth mentioning, to say our economy is an interventionist economy. We do not depend on our own to grow our economy. We depend on outside forces to grow our economy. In other words, national transport, national other departments like Treasury, but also we depend upon the outside world if they are prepared to invest. And if that investment can be of success, it is going to create anything between 10 and 50,000 jobs. I believe with our population, that is 1.2 million, that is going to have a knock effect on our economy. And our, of course, here there's preliminary actions that are taking place where our department, as well as Development Bank of South Africa, are involved. The studies that must be there and feasibility and so on. And then we believe we are the hub of renewable energy as a province. And if we are the hub of renewable energy, there's some aspects that we have to give attention to. And therefore, the solar capital as well as other renewable energy actions are taking place, and we are attracting a lot of investment. This project has attracted investment of $6 billion, of which 40% is earmarked for local content to stimulate. And local content, to us, we want to redefine the national definition of local content. We do not want to say local content is South Africa. We're saying local content is Northern Cape. We are very clear in terms of that because if, comparatively speaking, you're looking at it broadly, and then it would mean it would sideline and isolate Northern Cape. Therefore, that local content, the 40% will be $2.4 billion, which to me will be a lot. And don't forget what I said during the definition, SMME development, skills development. These aspects will be addressed at that particular level. Other economic activities is the Upington International Airport cargo, as well as the DR freight hub. DR is one of our poorest areas, somewhere down there that used to be a very busy railway hub. It's no more. But what we want to do, we want to go back to that. We want to ensure DR, Noport, and other related areas are developed and are, in actual fact, a freight hub. And then one other aspect that we are looking at is a special economic zone in Upington. And this is aimed at accelerating the implementation of government industrial development program, as indicated in the IPAP. And an amount of $35.9 million over the MTF has been provided for this initiative. In actual fact, this is one aspect that we do not want to isolate from the Bohubai development project. Because if we develop the rail line from Upington to Bohubai, that is going to add on to operations within the port itself. From that side, that's why we are visiting regularly Namibia. We also would like to involve them in terms of ensuring that we operate that port and that port cannot fail. The last issue that I wanted to raise on economic development is the Gamsberg zinc mine that the chairperson so eloquently talked about. Unfortunately, he can't hide his feeling and attachment. He's attached to the province and he's attached to the region where this development is taking place. So the chairperson is definitely excited about it. The Gamsberg zinc mine, the investment is going to be 4.8 billion. It is the first phase, which will come to full production in June and will employ 3,000 people. Employing even 1,000 people is going to make an impact in our economy and unemployment rate. Making it times three, that is going definitely to move us in a certain direction. But we hope that these kind of mines are going to have an impact on our GDP. Let me argue, because our GDP is currently in an average of 2%. That's what we are contributing to national. But we are saying that is probably direct that we are contributing 2%. We believe all the mining activities that are taking place within the province, if they can be registered within the province, that would mean we've got a better and a greater contribution to national GDP. And that is what we want to continue to argue as the province. But further on, we believe that this project, when it is in full swing, it is going to be having an amount of 10 billion investment. Consider, we said earlier, 4.8 billion can create over 3,000 jobs. 10 billion will create something like times 2.5 of what I said initially, which will definitely mean something to the province. That's why then, as a province, we are attempting by all means to ensure that the province is the major beneficiary in terms of its natural resources, be it mining, agriculture, and renewable energy. We want to ensure then that the people of the Northern Cape will definitely start to say poverty is something of the past. That's what we are working towards. On the issue of the fiscal framework, as well as all other matters, will be filled in by the acting HOD. But I think it is worth mentioning that we say, if you study organizational development, or read about it, if the apex is not stable, the organization is also suffering. At this point, we've got a new HOD every 6 months, and that is affecting the organization. And we find it very difficult to ensure then that we bring that stability. That is one of the issues that we are trying to settle in order for Treasury to be an exemplary department. That's why then I'm giving over to the acting HOD, Mr. Tamima Bija, and the team for them to take us through and fill in the gaps that were left by National Treasury, because I think honorable members said it as well. National Treasury gave a clear overview but there's some gaps that are there that I believe can be filled within the next 30 minutes, because I only use 10 minutes. Thank you, Jeff. Let me give over to...
You must highlight that gap, because you're now speaking to the structure that can intervene in terms of the Moneyballs Act. Yes.
Okay.
We're not here to fight with provinces. We are here to assist you to go forward. You must identify the two provinces to ask, where do you need assistance? In which fields? Please, do that. But Gamsberg, it's not very far from the Orange River. And if you look at it from the top, that can become the new economic hub in the western part of the Northern Cape. You've got Kuruman in the north, and you've got Kimberley, the R, in the eastern part. So, yes, that's good news. Over to you.
Okay.
To give you 20 minutes to do the rest.
Okay, now I'll stick to the 20 minutes. But just to indicate that as part of even beneficiating the zinc, there is a feasibility already that was launched by Gamsberg for a refinery, just to finish off the zinc issue. I'm going to start with just giving an update on the recommendations that were given by the select committee in the previous financial year. And then we'll go to the gaps in between what Treasury has presented and what we've prepared. In an effort to improve our fiscal position in the province, ESCO, through the sponsoring of these measures by Treasury, has actually agreed on the following issues to make sure that we can stay within our fiscal space as a province. To redirect underperforming programs that we're going to be actively involved in this financial year, to make sure that those programs that are not performing, we redirect. To strictly manage the rollover process, and I think we've started in the previous financial year, because if you check it against our 16-17 adjustment budget.
If you say we're going to intervene, tell us what you're going to do.
Yes. I'm giving you the specifics to say we are busy looking at underperforming programs to redirect those funds to the areas that are more needy, as an example. For the adjustment budget, we've already put in a criteria to say in the adjustment budget that is coming, we're strictly going to focus to Section 31 and make sure that those that are adjusted in this adjustment budget is only going to be also capital. So we've cut out on current expenditure to make sure that we focus on our capital spending. We've also resolved as a province to say that in those departments where the moratorium is not strictly adhered to, we're going to assist those departments by taking away the appointment function to make sure that at any point when the departments appoint, to make sure that there is sufficient money for those posts that they need to fill as a department. And we've also reviewed the moratorium on the appointment of employees to make sure that we cover the unintended consequences, because what has been happening is that in those areas where the departments have been applying to fill posts, and if those posts are not filled, they rather appoint people on contract and defeat the whole purpose of this exercise, which is a moratorium. NIDA has been repositioned, as you know, NIDA, the economic development wing entity in the department, and currently has appointed a new board to give it its new direction, especially on the economic projects. On the rationalization of the entities, the work has already been done. The MEC is sitting with two options in terms of the entities that are going to be merged. The one is the entity is the one for gambling, and the other one is the one that's dealing with liquor licenses. So, as part of rationalization, these entities are going to be merged very soon, because all the reports have been submitted now to the MEC to take a stance on it. With regards to our integrated budgeting process, we are now involving all the departments. In this case, especially coming along with us is the is Premier as an oversight body, and also COFTA and National Treasury when we look at the budgetary issues. Currently, the Treasury is in the process of aligning its structure to make sure that there is sufficient capacity within the department, and also to align it to the generic structure that was put together by National Treasury. On the irregular expenditure, we realize that, and we've been attempting with the departments to get this thing going, but the department has not been moving. What we are doing now, we're going to assess the department. We've gotten additional capacity, appointed the company, and now we've started in health, as an example, to make sure that we actually investigate and make sure that we deal with the irregular expenditure. In the past, we used to be asking the departments because they need to do all the investigations. They've not been doing it. Treasury now had to come in and do it themselves, but we needed to get additional capacity to actually do that. And as I'm speaking, we started with health, and we're hoping that from health, because we're looking at where the biggest irregular is, and then we're going to move to the other departments as well. But we will give more details later on other departments, what we're doing with irregular expenditure. I'm gonna then skip over to the slide that starts with the cash position. This was just quickly responding to some of the recommendations, but I said in irregular expenditure, there's a lot of other things that we're doing that we're going to just be explaining now. On our cash as a province, in the previous financial year, we closed with a 149 million under, which is an overdraft.
Sorry to interrupt you. This slide on the recommendations is not part of our presentation, so please forward that to the secretariat. I think it's 3 or 4 slides.
Yes,
that it becomes part of this.
Yes, we will. We will do that. We just need some quick changes, and then include this very specifically. Although the presentation does respond to them, but we included that specifically. I think we're just going to make copies of these slides.
Yeah. If you can forward it now, then someone can just go and do the.
Yeah, it's already given. Yes, we give it. Okay. On the issue of the cash, in the previous financial year, we closed with 149. We've been working very hard to make sure that 149 negative. We've been working very hard to make sure that we actually reduce this overdraft. We've managed to reduce it a little bit. We closed last year with a negative of 86 million. We are hoping that by the end of this financial year, we will have been able to can close that hole. But we're going to work very hard on that one. But there has been some improvement that we've been able to achieve at that front, at that level.
You see, you get that allocation from the Treasury, just over 16 billion rand, plus your own revenue gives you over 17 billion.
Yes.
In terms of that size of the cake, how are you going to address that goes to all the provinces.
Yes.
What's your action plan to address it over what period of time? I don't think all provinces can do it within the one financial year. That's
yes.
Not possible. Thank you.
Part of what we've done, and I think it has been mentioned by National Treasury, is that our biggest pressure on our cash, especially in education, related to the appointment of additional teachers because of the learner numbers that have increased. What National Treasury did was that they've not been allocated additional funding for this for the past 2 years. Then they only gave the additional funding in this current financial year. So we're hoping with that additional funding, we'll then be able to take care of these additional teachers that we had to put into our system. It's about 359 of these. So we think we'll be able to can be reduced, because when you look at our over expenditure, and as was presented by National, a big chunk of it relates to educators in the Department of Education. So we will then give an entire process, maybe submit, to say how we're going to make sure that we move into a positive balance. And as indicated by the chairperson, we might not be able to deal with it within 1 year. But what we've done, and which is somewhere in the slides going forward, is that we've dedicated specialized people within Treasury to just focus on the personnel of education, dedicated, and see what's happening in the system. The complication with the Department of Education is that they have policies that a class can't stay empty for more than one day. If the teacher is not there for one day or 2 days, they need to get a teacher into that particular class. So the whole process that other departments will follow when they have to appoint, they can't follow the entire process. But for us to put in controls into that system, we needed to study how that happens to make sure that as they get these additional teachers, a chunk of them normally on contract, we are able then to can manage the situation. On slide number 10, which is on the cumulative unauthorized expenditure, there's an additional one, and talking about over expenditure that you've just talked about now, there's an additional $223 million in this current financial year. But these figures are preliminary, just to caution the members. They are preliminary till they get audited. To say, and education has added $122 million into that, and health has added $100 million into that of the cumulative unauthorized expenditure. On the side of revenue, which is an area that's a little bit within our control to make sure that we can improve our revenue, there is a slight improvement from the previous financial year of about 3.5% that we've been able to collect. The biggest areas of concern for us is the motor vehicle license that have been able to collect 92%, and the patient's fee that only collected 56%. But on the side of the motor vehicle licenses, we've started, as indicated by National Treasurer as well, to say we've started with moving this collection of the motor vehicle license to the post office. We did 10 sites or municipalities in the previous financial year. In this current financial year, we're going to move all those sites into the post office because that pilot indicated to us that we've been able to gain improve on those sites where we've moved them into SAPO, because they give us all the money that gets collected. The complication is that in the municipality side, they collect and then they don't pay over, and then they use it for other means, and they owe the province a lot of money. On the health part, which is the patient fees, what we've done as Treasury to date, there's two things that we've done. There is a new system. When it was implemented, the patient administration and billing system, there was a problem in the billings themselves. So this system is working perfectly now. It's working properly. And what we also did, we also then assisted health to appoint some clerical people that could be making sure that these invoices are followed up with the necessary institutions like individuals, and then also medical aid and all that to collect the funds. So we expect that on the health patient fee, there is going to be an improvement in this current financial year. So both on motor vehicle license and on patient fees, we expect some significant improvements. And we've got other additional initiatives that we are also working on to make sure that we can collect additional revenue in the province, and we've actually listed some of them on slide number 15. I'm not going to go through them individually. On the conditional grants, yes, National Treasury did present on some of these. I'm just going to explain two or three of them on the areas that we underspend. But just to indicate that for most of these conditional grants, we did apply for rollover in the areas where we underspend. The underspending happened in the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Grant, where we underspent by 18 million, and then also in the Land Care Program Grant, where we underspent by 1.4 million. On the side of health, it was a Comprehensive HIV/AIDS Grant, where we underspent by 15.8 million, and these are purely delays in the delivery of medical equipment, and for this we've applied for the rollovers because these orders have been placed
It's just the delay of the delivery of some of this equipment. We also underspent in COFSA in human settlement grant. As indicated, we got 100 million in the adjustment process, and we're only able to spend 75% of that. And some of the delays there were also caused by the slow delivery of the projects in various sites. And we've also applied for a rollover in there. The grant that's also underperforming is the one of Community Library Services grant. We only spent 83% of that grant. We underspend by 30.7 million. And because of some procurement delays in this particular grant, in the building of those libraries. So these are the major grants that we did underspend on, and as I've indicated, most of it we have applied for the rollover in terms of the grants themselves. On the slide that talked about the performance, the overall of the province, we spent 98, and I think it was indicated by Treasury, and then we spent 98.7% of the budget. The amount that we underspent was 211 million. This underspending was I'm just going to go through a few departments in terms of underspending and overspending. In the Department of Education, as indicated earlier, there was an overspending of 98 million as a result of the increase of the learner numbers in the previous year. And then on the goods and services, also in education, there's an overexpenditure of 69 million, mainly due to overpayments for maintenance of schools, infrastructure, for which, if you look at the budget, it was budgeted for under capital. So when you take the money from capital and move it but if you compare this to, you'll see that we will not be overspending if we just net off these two. On education still, the department have recorded an under expenditure of 60 million, the one I was talking to now. This is also on the conditional grants and rollovers have been requested. On the other departments, I just want to focus on the big ones first. Yes, I was just talking to education. I'm just trying to get help quick. Sorry. Okay, there's some few problems on my slides here. But looking at the figures there, you will see that on the Department of Health, there is an over expenditure as well in compensation to the tune of 73 million, and there is an under expenditure in capital to the tune of 290 million, and then in goods and services there's an over expenditure of about 137 million. The over expenditure in the health personnel is a pressure that has been coming along, mostly related to the professionals that we have there in health that have been added onto the system itself. And then now focusing into compensation itself. The compensation budget. The main appropriation is 9 billion for the entire compensation of the province. And to date, there is an over expenditure of about 101. We spent about 101% of that particular budget, leading to an over expenditure of 173, which is primarily between health and education. When you just look at the part of compensation, you'll see education spent 102%, health also spent 102%, and most of the other departments have actually underspent a little bit. Health spent 95%, social development, and then legislature spent 97%, and then agriculture, corporate services spent 99% of their budget. And then the savings that we've been able to can accumulate over some time when it comes to compensation, still focusing on compensation, in slide number 29 of the presentation, you will see that in the year 16-17, we had a saving of 45.7 million under compensation. Budgeted, we had a saving of about 42.8 million in that financial year. In the following year, 17-18, we also have a saving of about 72.3 million. Those savings were primarily realized because of some of the moratorium that we had to put in place in the two financial years. But these funds will have been shifted to other priority funds within those particular departments where those savings have actually been realized. So for us, the moratorium did create some savings in these two financial years. We expect that even going forward, there is going to be some savings in compensation in an effort to make sure that we can control our expenditure in compensation and not grow it. When you look at the next slide that talks to the number of employees in education and also the clinical personnel in health, you will see that over a period between 2015 to 2018, within education, we added a number of 393 educators, and then in health, we added a number of 226, and these are just clinical personnel within the Department of Health. So I'm not going to repeat that one on education, just saying that our problems of overspending in education started in 16-17 when we had to add 357 educators onto the system. And we're expecting this year, because of the additional money that has been provided by Treasury, that we're going to have some relief with regards to the overspending that we're experiencing in education. And the growth, as indicated in health, was primarily due to the clinical staff. And that's with regards to the two big departments and specifically focusing on issues of compensation, because this is where our problem is in these two departments. It's primarily on personnel. That's why I've really emphasized the discussion on personnel to say, this is what we want to do, and these are the numbers that we actually want to control to make sure that we can be able to stay within what was allocated in this department. And then on infrastructure, as was requested also in the terms of reference, our infrastructure budget for the 17-18 financial year, 42% of it was in the Department of Public Works and Roads, primarily for roads, and then 19% was in health infrastructure, and then 22% was in education, 2% in sports, 7% in human settlements, 3% in social development, and 5% was in agriculture. With regards to the Nature of Investment report, as at March 2018, we had 682 projects in the province, and a chunk of these projects are related to new or replaced infrastructure, which is 208 of those projects. Rehabilitation and refurbishment was about 136 of these projects. Upgrading and additional was about 231 of these projects. So that's where the chunk of the projects are lying within the department. And maintenance, although is at 70 projects, it was responsible for 1.1 billion of the expenditure that we spent under capital. And then the status on the projects as at the end of 31st March 2018. You will see that most of the projects are actually located there within or under construction between 51% and 99%. And then the others that are packaged together is about 1.3 billion. All in all, these projects that are under construction is about 2.9 billion that we spend on it. And originally we had budgeted for this project at a tune of 2.6 billion. So there's a slight over expenditure in that regard. On the economic infrastructure, which constitutes agriculture, human settlement, and roads. There's about 169 of those projects. We budgeted 1.5 billion for those projects. And during the adjustment budget, we added 30 million. And after the adjustment budget, the budget was 1.571 billion. Of these expenditures, about 1.6 billion, which is a slight over expenditure of about 65 million on this project. And the expenditure trends on this particular project that relates to the economy, you will see that most of the expenditure is quite spread across with specific and upward trends on the expenditure related to the projects in the Department of Public Works, which relates to roads. You'll see normally in winter the expenditures are quite low, but when summer starts, this expenditure goes up. I think it's just in the nature of how you build roads. Most of the time, your peak of the work, you do it when summer comes in, which is somewhere there in November and December. And then I'm going to skip over to the social infrastructure project. On the social infrastructure project, it's education, health, social development, sports, arts, and culture. There was about 530 of this project to the adjusted budget of 1.3 billion. An expenditure amounted to 1.2 billion with an under expenditure there of about 42 million. When you look at the expenditure trends of this project, you'll see that there is a small spike there in education in July and also in March at the end of the financial year. But in other departments, it's quite evenly spread throughout, and there is also expenditure going up around October and November. And then that's the expenditure on infrastructure. When we go to the irregular expenditure, trying to get more into detail in terms of what's happening in the province. Yes, I'm not gonna go through the figures, but there is just a slight improvement when you compare 16-17 to 17-18, especially on education. Education used to stand at 2.5 billion, now it has been reduced to 1.959 billion. And then in total, we moved from 10.851 billion to 10.467 billion in this current financial year. And this, I need to qualify it, is preliminary figures. The main root cause of this irregular expenditure is a high levels of non-compliance in supply chain management, resulting in these high amounts of irregular expenditure. The bulk of this irregular expenditure in the Department of Education and in the Department of Health is primarily caused by implementing agents. In this case, we use two implementing agents, Public Works and IDT. Yes, we must accept there is a lack of appropriate preventative controls to prevent the reoccurrence. There's also a lack of timeous and decisive action for transgression, resulting in the accumulation of this irregular expenditure. For the Department of Education, we've put in an application for condonement for irregular expenditure totaling 1.129 billion, which was submitted to the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and National Treasury, and this request for condonement was declined. The accounting officer subsequently approved for this irregular expenditure to be derecognized, and this is in line with the guideline from National Treasury that indicates that in an event where no official was found liable in law and the irregular expenditure was not condoned by the relevant authority, the accounting officer may write it off. With regards to the Department of Health, as I've indicated before, we have appointed a consultant to assist us with the completeness of this irregular expenditure and also to investigate so that we should put in an application for the condonement of this irregular expenditure. So we expect that even before the end of this financial year, we should be completed with this project and submitted all the documentation to National Treasury, and then so that we can see how we can condone this. With regards to the Department of Roads, Public Works and
Can you start wrapping up, please?
Yes, with this department, Public Works and Agriculture, we have engaged with National Treasury with regards to the condonement of this irregular expenditure in these two departments. And we are continuing. We are hoping that we will get a response very soon on this one with this department. The Department of Transport has requested Treasury to assist with the process of investigation when it comes to Department of Safety and Liaison to investigate the irregular expenditure relating to the Leonard Transport. This is where it emanates from in the department. The merits of the cases relating to Leonard Transport are currently being investigated by Treasury as we speak now to come to a conclusion on this one. With other departments, because these are the three major departments. With other departments, all other departments have indicated that there is a process underway to address the reporting irregular expenditure. Some are in the process of concluding the investigations and are in the process of requesting condonement from the relevant authorities. So we've moved in terms of the actions that we are doing with regards to irregular expenditure on most of the departments, and we're hoping very soon to finalize it. A quick one, this was presented by Treasury as well, on the accruals and payables. On the accruals and payables, our problem really is on the Department of Roads and Public Works, and this relates to rates and taxes, and also it relates to the fleet services. Rates and taxes, when you have to calculate it from the department, is to the tune of 608 million that we're still owing to the municipality. A chunk of this, which is about 95% of this, relates to Soplaiki Municipality. And we are in discussions with Soplaiki Municipality because a chunk of it also relates to the mental hospital that only is going to be completed now. And it's already owing in the tune of over 500 million on rates and taxes before it actually started. So we are in the discussion with the municipality to see how we can actually write off this particular amount, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. We've not started with the hospital as yet. Our only problem that we're still grappling with is those accruals in the health department. And as part of our intervention, we are looking at coming up with a solution on this one. And I know National Treasury is also busy with a project on the Department of Health, so we're hoping that there will be a lot of assistance on the accruals in the Department of Health and payables. We would like the committee to note the fiscal position as was presented, and to say this is where we were. And the measures that Treasury has implemented or is intending to implement still in this current financial year to stay within our envelope. And also the efforts that we also taking, the, we would like to the committee to note with regards to irregular expenditure. And then we also indicating that the committee must note that we are improving on the controls with regards to appointments of educators and also in appointments that are happening within health. And that the underspending on conditional grants relate mainly to rollover requests submitted to National Treasury for approval. Thanks, Chairperson. And then the other slide you'll see is just additional information with regards to other smaller departments, but we didn't want to focus. We just focus on the two main departments. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Northern Cape, on the members. I hope you wrote down your points for discussion or deliberation. We're going straight to Limpopo. I'm going to give you 50 minutes, as we did now with Northern Cape. See, when you are in discussion with a department or a municipality, what is the outcome of the discussion? Where are you heading to? Because provincial departments is owing municipalities money. And Mr. Kumbu is chairing a structure in my province where the MMs and CFOs serve on, because I spoke to him about this thing. And what is the movement that departments pay municipalities what they supposed to pay? Emi Situli, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable members of the committee. Chairperson, if I may begin by stating that I'll cover most of the issues, and the HRD will come in and talk about fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure. Generally, I'll talk about most of the issues related to the province. I think, firstly, I'd like to indicate to the Honourable Committee that financially we are healthy. We have plus minus 1.5 billion rand as a buffer in our bank account, which is due to managing our budget very, very strictly going forward. And we have enormous pressures, but at this stage, we're financially pretty healthy. The other positive thing is that we have eventually had our structure for Treasury endorsed by the public administration. So that has also helped us significantly to appoint appropriate people in appropriate places. So that has taken some time. The last time we had a structure was in 2007 when I was head of Treasury. So it's taken us over 11 years for us to get a new structure in place. I think the inefficiencies there are very frustrating. The HRD has been trying to get this thing together since 2013, and we've only now had it been endorsed. So that is something that also plays on your performance and how you're supposed to perform.
So that's also the issue in the intervention.
Indeed.
Which you corrected afterwards.
Yeah. Chairperson, as far as our economics goes, from having a negative growth of minus 1.6% in 2016, we are pleased to inform this committee that we've turned it around, and in 2017, the growth of our province has gone up to 1.2%, and we are growing as I speak now. So we are improving our economic performance going forward as far as that concerns. As far as the recommendations made by this Honourable Committee in our last sitting last year, we have improved our spending, as you're aware, Chairperson, from 97.8% in 16-17 to 98.7% in this last financial year. We continue to have the management, the personnel management framework to ensure that we don't bloat our civil service, as you're aware. We have reduced our spending on compensation of employees from 72% down to 68%, but this is a pressure which I'll highlight as we go forward, Chair. We are managing it. The unions don't like us doing it, but we're there, and we're trying to manage it going forward. As far as the issues on spending on contractors in the Department of Health, we'll elaborate as we go forward, Chairperson. We are excited to inform this Honourable Committee that we have got a license for the Special Economic Zone in Makado, Messina. As you may have read in the newspapers yesterday, we have signed the deal with a number of Chinese companies. There is a promised investment of over $4 billion into the area. Our long-term challenge in that area is water. However, the Department of Water and Sanitation are in discussions with our partners, or our next-door neighbors, Zimbabwe, and we're hoping to secure water going forward. This metallurgical project that is going to happen in Messina is significant. There will be a power plant. There will be plants to turn steel into alloys, etc. The only challenge that we have there, Chairperson, is that we have allocated a significant amount of money to the department, in fact, to a state-owned enterprise called Limpopo Economic Development Agency, to develop the infrastructure. We gave them 36 million rand last year. There was an additional amount of money that they could get from the Department of Trade and Industry. However, the minister wasn't too convinced that they were able to spend that money, so he's only allocated them 9 million rand. We are managing this thing. Our take is, as Treasury, is that we think they should appoint a project manager to run this thing going forward. I'm sure honourable members will be aware the risk there is that the Chinese are impatient. They might just run ahead of us if we don't manage this thing appropriately. The other exciting thing is that Tubatse, which is the biggest fort, honourable Chairperson, there are 38 mines in the Tubatse area with another 8 mines that are about to be opened. The current pipeline is about 13 billion rand. We have applied for a license from the minister. The minister's committee on SEZ will be sitting in August, and we hope that we'll get another SEZ. But this is a massive project, and it's something that we're quite excited about, considering the opportunities in Tuatse. And as you're all aware, that area has enormous unemployment, and we do believe that if all things are managed appropriately, this will have an enormous impact on the economy of the province. As I say, it's one of those areas where you can extract raw products as shallow as a meter underneath the ground. And it's from chrome to platinum-based metals, etc., in that area. So we are excited about it. It's about managing it going forward, Chair. There has been a lot of illegal mining that has been happening, so we need to manage that going forward. However, we've had a very good relationship with the SAPS, and we have reduced that illegal mining significantly. Chairperson, the other project that we're excited about is broadband connectivity. We have pumped 100 million rand into establishing broadband in the province. We're focusing on Bulawayo, Seshego, and Mangwen to ensure that we can get connectivity there where our main hospitals can connect with us. Our biggest challenge, Chairperson, and I think it's something that this committee must take note of, is CETA. CETA, in our opinion, is a very archaic institution. They, as you may be aware, Chairperson, if you buy a computer through CETA, if you bought it at GAME, you'd buy it for 7,000 rand. If you buy it through CETA, you're going to pay 27,000 rand. So it's something that really is frustrating. They are putting their fingers in this pie, and they're saying to us that you can't really develop this thing without us being on board. We're trying to create some sort of understanding of how we can do this. We do believe, Chair, if we can roll out this this broadband connectivity, it can create a huge impact and on our economy. We can develop a huge amount of jobs in this space. We just need to have a better relationship with CETA and let CETA understand that this is about driving the economy as opposed to slowing the economy down.
So why can't we do what they are doing? Leave it there. I'm just sensitizing you because in question time,
there's
members, what? Why can't we do it? Why must we call someone else to come and do the job?
There's an act called the CETA Act, Chairperson, and that thing is, well, I think that probably is what we'd like you to seriously consider. But it is something that is really slowing down this process. We've got everything in place. We can run this thing. In fact, you're not buying anything, Chairperson. We're hiring a lot of that infrastructure. What we're putting in is just to connect ourselves as departments. And the consequence of us getting this right has a huge impact on health, and that we don't have somebody like Thule going to Mangwen Hospital, the Taba Hospital, and Chilazini Hospital and opening a file at every single one of those hospitals and getting ARVs at each of those hospitals and then making Naope, which is happening, by the way. Chairperson, so that's why we need to get this thing to come to fruition as fast as possible. We put another 12 million rand into revitalizizing agriculture and agri-processing. As you're aware, we're a big agricultural province, and we do see beneficiation out of agriculture going forward, Chairperson. So This is something that we're managing going forward. We still have challenges with SMMEs. In our presentation, you'll see our payment of accounts or our payment of invoices to most of our suppliers is reasonably high. There's only two departments that are having a challenge, and that's namely the two social sector departments, health and education. Health being the worst. They've got thousands of invoices that are outstanding, and it's something that we really need to work on going forward. We are engaging with health about this matter, but it's something that we need to continue to discuss. It is a report that is taken to EXCO on a monthly basis to indicate how we're paying our invoices, but it's something that we'll do going forward, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like to just concentrate a bit on the Department of Health. And we agree with National Treasury, there is a 900 million rand plus accruals in the Department of Health. The Department of Health, Chairperson, as Treasury, Provincial Treasury, we've pumped in 1 billion rand over the last 3 years to deal with their challenges. However, they still continue to indicate this accrual matter, which is 900 odd million rand this year. Chairperson, we did an investigation. So we took one of our financial specialists and we put them into the Department of Health to understand exactly what the challenge is. We're spending plus minus 16 million rand a month on pharmaceuticals. We're returning 6 million rand a month of pharmaceuticals that are old. So this is something that we really, really need to understand, Chairperson, and how to manage this. We're going to continue drilling down on this matter of health because we can't consistently have this pressure of health on our budget even though we consistently give them additional money. As was mentioned by the Department of our National Treasury, is that we do give them additional money at adjustment time. Yes, they still have 900-odd million rand of these accruals going forward, Chairperson. The other challenge that we have in the Department of Health is that in this year, they didn't pay performance bonuses last year. We've had to give them the permission to pay performance bonuses this year. It's a cost of 100 million rand, and it's going to have serious pressure on our COE going forward, Chair. The other issue that we've had to give health permission to do is to appoint cleaners and groundsmen in our hospitals. It has to happen. It's 1,400 people that need to be appointed. We do know the process in Limpopo to appoint an individual can take up to 12 months. So how long this is going to take for people to be appointed, probably we'll be able to mitigate that pressure on our budget going forward because of the time it takes for people to be appointed in health. So health, Chair, continues to be a serious challenge for us. And we do believe that we need intervention both nationally and probably from Treasury to try and deal with this. I'll just give you one example, Chairperson. There is a drug that we use for... I'm just trying to think what it is. But anyway, it's a drug that is used. We ran out of the drug in the province. The Department of Health then phoned the supplier and asked the supplier, can we please buy that drug directly from them? The supplier said, with pleasure. We got the price from the supplier, 10 Rand. We were told, no, you can't buy it directly from the supplier. You must go through the national contract. The national contract, we're paying 21 Rand for the particular, exactly the same item. So my point being, Chairperson, is that surely we should be spending a lot more time putting pressure on the price that we're paying for pharmaceuticals.
This is correct, where I take note of that point. This is going to Budget Council.
So we need to continuously look at what prices we're paying for drugs. Surely if we're buying huge amounts of drugs, this is something that we need to put the pressure. That's a leverage that we can use so that we can reduce the price of drugs as opposed to increasing the price of drugs, Chairperson. So those are the two issues that we have picked up going forward. We're doing more work in the Department of Health because we want to understand why we're having this pressure all the time. As I just like to repeat, so we're spending 12 million rand a month, 12 to 15 million rand a month on buying pharmaceuticals, but we're taking back 6 million rand a month of expired pharmaceuticals. There's something not working there, Chairperson. So, yeah, we need to, and health, I can assure you, I'm sure in Northern Cape they have exactly the same pressure. I mean, they've shown us what pressure they have on health. So, and it's not only us, it's every single provincial government is having challenges with health. So I think we need to do a bit more work on that issue, Chair. Education, as you're aware, Chairperson, for the last 3 years, we implemented Section 18 in education. We did improve it from having an adverse outcome of the audit. However, We are a bit worried about whether they're going to be able to manage, stay there, Chair. So, excuse me, we are a bit concerned. The HOD and myself engage regularly with the acting CFO there, who's a financial specialist from Treasury, who we've placed there to assist us that we don't slide back into an adverse. The post is now freed, so we can advertise for a CFO into that department, but that right now we need to manage this thing quite closely going forward, Chairperson. So education, we believe, is reasonably stable, but there are some red lights that are flashing, and we'll have to continue to manage that going forward, Chair. In the presentation, you'll see we talk about issues related to our feeding schemes or the National Nutrition Program that goes forward. We did underspend last year a little bit, but it is on course. The other thing that we think is very positive in the Department of Education is that we're up to speed with the norms and standards in all our schools. So we're up to the national standard. It's taken us a long time to get there, but we're there now. Some schools didn't qualify for that expenditure due to various issues that they were supposed to comply to, and therefore they didn't necessarily get the money, and we do have some elaboration in our points there going forward, Chair. So as far as education is concerned, as I say, we do have some red lights, and we hope that we can manage that going forward, Chair. When it comes to social development, I'm sure all honourable members are aware of the Nawongo outcome of the court case in Orange Free State, the Free State. Due to that finding by the High Court in the Free State, there could be serious challenges and pressures on the social development budget. Myself and the DDG did engage with social development for a long time about their budget pressures. There are big budget pressures, and there are 62,000 kids that need foster homes sitting in Limpopo. And we have the funding, but the kids, there the kids are. There's 62,000 kids that need foster help, and we can't necessarily deal with it going forward, Chair. So there's big pressure on children in Limpopo, and I'm sure, and we're finding big pressure of child households in the northern part of our province, in Zembe area, which is close to Zimbabwe, where Zimbabwean kids will often find that they're on their own, no parents and anything like that. So there's big pressure going there, Chair. Chairperson, as far as our SOEs are concerned, yeah, as you see, the audit outcome, Limpopo Economic Development Agency has gone back as far as that is concerned, Chair, and we need to work on them going forward. It's an asset issue, as is most of our departments that are having challenges with their audits. It's about assets and how to manage the assets going forward. We do but have a bit of pressure on one of our state-owned entities called Road Agency Limpopo. RAL is overcommitted by plus minus 800 million rand, Chairperson. It's a serious challenge. Myself and the HOD have engaged with RAL on a number of occasions to see how we can mitigate this challenge going forward, but it is a bit of a stress for us. We think we can manage it, but it's something that we have to look at going forward, Chair. Chair, as far as I know I'm jumping all over, but I'm sure honourable members will understand. As far as our audit outcomes are concerned, if I can just go back there again quickly, Chair. As far as our audit outcomes are concerned, you will see that as Treasury, we've got a clean audit with the Gambling Board. We were the only two institutions in the Zimbabwe to get clean audits. There has been a regress in agriculture and COGSA, which is the local government, housing and traditional affairs. The reason why they went backwards is because they bought a piece of property that was valued at 8 million rand, and they paid 120 million rand for it, 108 million rand for it. So something that SIU is looking at and they're investigating, and we trust there will be an outcome in due course with regard to that, Chair. As far as going forward, when it comes to our departments, we think we're going to keep it there, and hopefully we're going to be able to have three departments that are going to have a clean audit in this next financial year. Chair, as far as own revenue is concerned, I again just want to get back to the issue of health, Chair. Health has under-collected their revenue by 600 million rand. If they could collect their money, then they wouldn't have accruals. And what we've done as Treasury is that we've given them additional money to appoint people in hospitals to collect, to revenue clerks to collect them, and we've given them additional money to improve their IT infrastructure. So we're going to continue. Well, we hope there's going to be improvement going forward. This last year, it was more or less the same. They're under-collected, definitely. As you'll see in your slide 20, there is an under-collection in health that they under-collected by 10 million rand. So we do need them to pick up the game significantly. As I say, if they could collect the 600 million rand, it's not difficult, Chairperson. The people that owe their money is the Road Accident Fund, it's medical aids, and workman's, it's not called workman's compensation anymore, it's called something else. But it's, you know what I'm talking about. People are injured on duty, and they should be claiming money back from that. So we try to wave a carrot there and say to them, if you collected more than you should have, we'll give you the money back. However, that doesn't seem to be working as far as we're concerned so far, Chair. But it's something that we're aware of. Chairperson, so we have improved significantly in our collection. As you see, we budgeted 1.1 billion rand for revenue. We collected 1.3 billion rand. Some of our municipalities have collected money for us, but we're never going to get it. Tabo Zimbio, 75 million rand. That's gone. I don't think we're ever going to see that money. But these things, we have engagement with the Department of Transport, and we have a very good relationship. And again, we have this. If you do collect more money, we'll give you the money back. And it has helped significantly with the Department of Transport. And we'll continue to work on our strategy to improve our revenue collection going forward. It does help us significantly. As I say, it's a collection of fines that haven't been very good, and the under-collection of patient fees by the Department of Health going forward, Chairperson. As far as our overall spending is concerned, as you can see, we did spend 98.7% of our budget. There was a bit of under-expenditure in some of our departments, as was mentioned by National Treasury. We did underspend by 829.361 million rand. It's a discussion that we have with Treasury consistently. At adjustment time, which is usually in November, we then give departments an additional 1 billion rand, but yet we underspend by 800 million rand. So we need to try and find a balance there that we can ensure that we do spend the money accordingly going forward, Chairperson. If we get to issues related to we managed to sustain a growth, as I mentioned, in 2017 from minus 1.6% in 2016 to a growth of 1.2% in the last financial year, and we do believe that's going to grow significantly. Stats SA did indicate that in the last quarter of the last calendar year, we absorbed as many people into the labour force as the Western Cape. We were one of the fastest growing, so that does bode well with our growth. We are accumulating surpluses from underspending, which is sometimes not a good thing. But that does help us to buffer issues. Chair, as you're aware, we have to mitigate any climate disasters that happen because we're not going to get any money from National. I think the other risk that we have, Chairperson, is the current wage negotiations. I'm sure you're aware that we're pretty much on our own after this in the wage negotiation. It's how we manage it going forward, Chair. We have improved our management of our personnel. There's natural attrition that's happening, and we're managing that going forward, Chairperson. Our infrastructure spend did improve from the last financial year quite significantly, and we are managing it going forward. There was a lot of pressure on education. However, as was mentioned by National Treasury, we did get additional 80 million rand, which has taken pressure off education, and we will continue to ensure that we do work appropriately there. We have to continue to reduce our unauthorized and irregular expenditure, which the HIV will deal with now. And, of course, the big challenge that we have as a country is to implement consequence management and how we implement consequence management. And I'd just finally like to say something to the committee with regards to our municipalities. I know it's not on our agenda, but, yes, the amount of money that was invested by our seven municipalities in VBS was 1.2 billion rand. I have instructed the HID to appoint forensic investigators in all seven of those municipalities, and we hope that we can come out with a result in due course. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Thuli. We can see you are hands-on since the intervention was terminated. And thank you for the role you are playing. HUD, you've got 20 minutes to conclude.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir, and good morning to the Honorable colleagues and members. Chair, I think the MEC has really covered most that I wanted to say, so I'll just touch on one or two points. And then
it was a former HUD.
Chair, I just think again on the structure. We really strengthened through the intervention. We've gone a bit backwards now with some vacancies that have occurred, and we needed to wait for the structure, but at least that's in place now. Sorry. So at least that structure now is in place and will strengthen. So we'll certainly strengthen the Treasury again. Our Accountant General left us, and we'll fill those posts going forward. I think also, Chair, we've strengthened our IGR structures where we used to meet half yearly with our municipalities, where we'll now meet quarterly. And I think our reporting has also improved to be more relevant to take more strategic decisions at those meetings. Chair, then on that you can go to the 30-day payments. As the MEC touched on it, it's really health and education. All our other departments are above. We've put a benchmark of 95% just to measure our departments. Obviously, 100% is the ideal, but our two big departments are the ones that are lagging behind. Education, unfortunately, had budget pressures on the infrastructure spend, which we did get additional funding from National very late in the year, but that resulted in late payments. And health, with the budget pressures that they've had throughout the year, had a very negative impact on their payment cycle. And we'll need to look at that going forward. So then if we look at our irregular expenditure, unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful, as you'll recall, through the intervention, we had accumulated unauthorized of over 2.7 billion. That has been now cleared. We're left with new unauthorized expenditure subsequent to the intervention of 461 million. And of that, we have cleared more than half of that already through the current financial year, 166.250 million, leaving us with 294 million then still to be considered by SCOPA, and once that's done, we'll be able to fund it if it comes with funding, otherwise departments will have to fund it. But I think, as MEC said, our cash reserve is quite healthy, so we will be able to fund this. I think also just to share that although we've got accruals of 1.4 billion, we've got a cash reserve of just over 1.5 billion, and an underspending of 800 million. So at least our accruals are cash backed, if I can put it that way. So we're not going to run into cash flow problems once we pay these accruals. But we need to manage the accruals going down, especially in health going forward. On the regular spending, Chair, we have 5.6 billion rand in our votes, 1.7 billion in our public entities, a total irregular spend of 7.4 billion at the end of 2016-17. We put in a lot of work to try and clear these irregular expenditures or get them condoned or at least measures taken to then charge the people and raise these debts. We are working with the SIU and the Anti-Corruption Unit to investigate some of these irregular expenditures. Some are also being handed over to SAPS as we speak. We also, just on the public entities, RAL is the biggest, culprit or the biggest contributor, but they went back in the 16-17 audit back to 2011-12 and went and identified all irregular expenditures. So it wasn't left for AG. Some of them were missed by AG. So we've really come clean in RAL, and we need to now address those irregular expenditures going forward. Just in terms of progress then, in our departments, we've managed to clear 2.3 billion or close to 2.4 billion and also condoned 574 million. But then we incurred additional or new irregular expenditure of 2.9 billion or close to 3 billion. So it basically negated all our work that we did. And that's a concern for us. It's really contravening supply chain regulations that we need to work on, and it's just people trying to cut corners and then being caught when they haven't done the right thing. In the current year, we've also got 755 million under investigation with National Treasury and ourselves, and we've also returned some back to departments for further information as we could not identify the root causes. In public entities, we started 1.9 billion. We've cleared 1.5 billion and 217,000. So, but then again, we incurred additional of 1.5 billion. So what we cleared, we replaced, and that's unfortunate in the province. In the current year, 681 million is now still under investigation with ourselves and National Treasury, and we've condoned 27 million. So as a province, we started on 7.6 billion, and we're back to 7.4 billion after clearing just over 4.5 billion. And that is the challenge that we face, and we're working on that as Treasury to try and improve those issues. On our fruitless and wasteful, we started on 403 million. As MEC reported, if you look at COXTA, the 111 million, majority of that is the one land transaction, which was identified as paying excessive prices for a land in the Tubatsi area. And then education also relates to some of the Section 100 projects that were stopped through Section 100, but we've revitalized those projects now, and hopefully that will then reverse some of this fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But those also part of the submissions that we've made to National Treasury for condonement. I think also just on the revenue, we're also looking at installing what's known as a patient verification system to identify patients. A lot of our patients arrive at hospitals and say they don't work, but this will confirm who the patient is through the Home Affairs Register, etc., through the tax office also, so we'll identify whether you're actually earning a salary. If you're a government employee, we'll also be able to pick you up through that. We're also trying to improve our post office revenue collection facility. We're appointing a few more post offices now. It seems to be working better than through our municipalities. Our municipalities don't always pay the revenue over to us, and that also has an impact on our revenue collection as a province. In order of 50 million is now with our municipalities that have not been transferred to ourselves, and we're looking at that. Public Works Chair, the rental stock, we've seen an improvement there. We've installed a system to try and manage the rental stock, and I think that's starting to bear fruits, but we still have challenges around the crude revenue and the collection of the old revenue as such, so we're working on that with Public Works. So then on the conditional grants, we did underspend by 213 million, but all of that, or let me say a majority of that, has been applied for rollover, and we're awaiting the outcome from National Treasury, but I think it's all backed with relevant vouchers, so we should qualify for the full rollover. I think the MEC has covered me in the rest. Thanks very much, Chair.
You're done.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to MEC Thuli. All the members, let's go straight to the questions. The Treasury, Northern Cape, and Limpopo. Mr. Mandi, I'm just going to take your... any other questions? Let me just note, Mr. Mandi. Shopping. Popo, Monakiri, on Dr. Blanche, and almost Shimango. On Dr. Mandi, you may start.
I thought we were just going to go on a lunch, but it's fine. I was giving this Northwest man, because he's in trouble, to talk first. No, thank you. Note the presentation and welcome them. They always help us to do our work better, as we always say. I think I'll start with a section on in the Northern Cape on condonements, and probably I would like a comment on from the National Treasury on the guidelines to say if there is no official that is found to have been liable or otherwise on the irregular expenditure, and therefore the thing falls away, and it's in the guidelines of the National Treasury. Probably just more clarity and more information on that part. How does it work? It works when what happens, in as far as that is concerned. Yeah, and it's a major concern, Chief. I think it should be a major concern for the committee that whatever the amount, if you can't find the culprit, then so be it. And it's public funds. I think we need to find ways of dealing with that matter much better. Perhaps, Chair, in a distant future, we have to look at those guidelines quite closely. So comments on both from the National Treasury and I guess from them more than Northern Cape themselves. But to the Northern Cape, the acting chairperson chairperson said he says in development or organizational development or management whatever the apex is it says if it's not stable the rest is not stable. He mentions that there's been 6 months. Movements on the top of the apex, and it can't sound so normal. It's not normal, and we've got to know what causes this movement on the apex, top of the apex. Where 6 months? Is it capacity issues? Is it corruption issues? Charging people? Dismissing them, what causes this so much movement that is almost twice a year you move the head, and it's quite important, sir. It's quite important to underscore that point, because then it then leads to what I heard from the acting HOD presenting on I would battle to reference that. I can't remember what section it was, but he mentioned that they have now in a regular term outsourced some support, some intervention to deal with capacity across the department. To deal with the capacity that is lacking. I think a little bit of clarity there, Chair, must be sought to understand. What's the nature of this expertise to build capacity that is outsourced, and for how long, and what is its target? What kind of terms of reference for it to really complete the work? Because so you can't be on these outsourced capacity things forever. It doesn't build the department's strength to deliver. And then the other part, Chair, that I wanted to ask a question on is on the question of the, I think, conditional grants. That's that part, that section on conditional grant expenditure. Acting HOD is mentioning the fact that there's been delays delays to deliver, delays on delivering, you know. So what is the cause of this? Is it because they didn't pay the suppliers, or the suppliers themselves solicit the goods outside the province? So what's the nature of this delay that is referring to under the conditional grants that were underspent or underperforming there? It must give us a full picture what it is. It's delaying in delivery. So, who takes the ultimate responsibility for that in terms of not playing the part, his part or her part, in the whole process. The issue. Well, I hear the issue of in the introduction, the issue of the local content and talking to the local content and things like that. But it's also important that the local content, if we want to fight for the local content, and that there is full capacity to that, and there is because it will then you go fight for total local content on 40% of the 6 billion, but then you would then not spend again. You know, your part of the bargain doesn't work because it's not fixed. We're seeing it already in the department. Now, Chair, then the Section 18, I remember last year we spoke, there was a lady who came with the short time minister, lady minister, MEC that came, remember, came and talked about, busy with the Section 18, and it's, well, there was, I think if I recall, there were even dates by when the Section 18 was on health was going to be completed, or they're going to be take them out. It was almost, I heard, but let's see again, Joe, what's progress with that Section 18 on health in the Northern Cape? With the presentation here from a distance, it means that Section 18 is a permanent feature now. It looks like it. Limpopo says, Chair, that their Section 18 on education is it's 3 years now, and they are saying they are scared that there will be a regression. So what does that mean? And they are saying that there will be advertising for the CFO, but then the Section 18 that is still there in education, they will employ and then move away. They need to say, give us a little bit of a detail. One other matter, shall we raise last year with Limpopo, and the MEC did touch on it, is the issue on illegal mining. And he only says, short statement, he says, we are working well with SAPS, but what is the detail that Chad? Have they sort of arrested certain syndicates? Found syndicates? Have they? What kind of detail is there? Except that they are working well with SAPS. Has there been arrests that that have been made in as far as that? Yeah, is consent. I have a few others, Chair, but I hope that my colleagues will cover me as always. And if not, if there's time, I'll come back with those. Yeah, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Shimandi. Mrs. Karekwa, there was a matter for Treasury when the Honourable Member started with his input. Honourable Motlashupi.
No. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Maybe perhaps I should start with Limpopo. One must appreciate the fact that we have worked with Limpopo through its turbulences. taking it from Section 100. It's not a new thing in the Northwest. It happened in Limpopo, and it bore some fruits that we can see even today. With the departments that were under administration, we appreciate the fact that there's a lot of improvement. And also, in terms of the ruling party, I must make a comment that indeed Limpopo, this aspect that we are a non-racial organization can be seen through you in Limpopo. Honorable Terry Blanche, don't fear to join this movement. Yeah, I'm not out of order. We are a non-racial organization. Let me come to the facts, Chairperson. We are interested on that land that had to be purchased for 8 million, that ballooned to that amount. We are interested in that because we follow the money. We appropriate and we must follow that money. And as this committee, we are interested as to who is responsible, what is happening currently, and the consequences thereof. We want that. It's what we are highly interested in. With regards to the VBS investment, I know that in the province we were able to state, in my province, that there was a particular amount of money that was taken from water services in the Northwest given to this bank that is under liquidation. Could you expand and not just tell us that, you know, there is this investment, you stating it in passing, you know? We are also interested. You give us the details because those are public funds. And if they are going to be lost, we need to know what is happening to that. And if it was legally permissible for people to take the money that was intended for a particular purpose to invest it elsewhere. Chairperson, coming to the department, I don't want to plagiarize because I'm an academic par excellence. And plagiarism is an academic cry. Now, from the researchers' input, in terms of health, it says the department there in Limpopo has the highest underspending of 236 million. Could you account for that and explain it? Education, there was underspending of 199 million. Can you, because if there is underspending, I'm raising these things because if there is underspending, it means there was not proper planning. Or there must be a reason, a rational one for that matter, and not give feeble reasons as to why you underspend. Because if money were meant for a particular purpose and people are tweeting day and night about service delivery, and people are sitting with money and not spending it, it will give us a problem. And people come here and complain and say we want extra money when they cannot spend the few that they have. That is why I'm raising all these things. Public works and roads in Limpopo underspent with 135.5 million. And one department, safety, security and liaison, overspent with 201,000. We need an explanation as to why that happened. That's for Limpopo. Maybe I must come to the Northern Cape. Yeah, they speak the same language as myself, Honorable Zimandi. With regard to the Northern Cape, if you look at the report on the conditional grant, Honorable Chairperson, is that they did not spend, all departments that you have mentioned did not spend as expected in terms of the conditional grant. And you have applied for a rollover. And this is done on a year in, out, applying for rollovers. You're not spending the money in a financial year. You develop APPs, develop strategic plans, that you don't follow yourselves as a department. And can we get an explanation as to why is it that you are not spending on these conditional grants? And National Treasury should also respond to this rollover contonment. Now, coming to your good selves, Social Development had an underspending of 31 million, the same as I did with National Treasury. You have been here listening. I won't repeat facts. 31 million. Coxstar had a high underspending of 91.2 million account. Provincial treasure, it had an underspending of 8.1%. Could we be provided with an explanation? Department of Roads Public and Public Works, its budget was revised upwards from 4.4 million to 4.6 million. And it spent 100% of that fund. Congratulations. Well done. This is what we want. This is exactly what we want from all departments who have responsible people that are employed. You know now, the Minister of COCTA said in the contracts, where I'm very much interested, in the contract of municipal managers, there must be a clause that must be inserted in terms of their performance agreement that if you don't spend the money, there must be consequence management for you because you are giving the money and you must deliver service. Chair, with health, they went on and on, Limpopo, about the underspending of that 60 million, and then they explained the reasons and all that. Though I'm a little bit skeptic about it. You have an acting HOD. Who said acting? Is it Northern Cape? Northern Cape, acting. Yeah, acting. You know, I will handle this thing at the end of this meeting when we adjourn because it's an internal business. In this government, we are tired of Hollywood. You must explain to us when was this post vacant, because it's a very senior and important post. When was it vacant? What are the processes now to date to fill the vacancy so that we can be taken on board? You are asking for condonement of 1.129 billion. And it has been declined, as you say. Can you give us the reasons as to how much will it affect the concerned department insofar as the decline of the condonement is concerned? To say it's condoned and what? What are the challenges that might be experienced, and what did you do to lead to a situation where there must be a condonement? You have appointed consultants in health for this condonement, as you alluded. Could we get quite a number of time, there's money that we spent on consultant and on service delivery. What is involved here in terms of the payment of this consultant? Lastly, Chair. There's non-compliance of supply chain management issues and there's an irregular expenditure of 10.6 billion. You know, Chair, there must be individuals here who involve themselves in this practice of irregular expenditure, and we are treating it light. I don't hear anything that anybody was charged. There was an investigation conducted, and to what level is it? If those can be provided to this committee, because you are not going to leave here without answers, we must follow, make follow-up so that we follow the money as we appropriate it. I'm sure about it. You will not leave here.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I also want to welcome the presentations as made by the provinces, the two provinces, and the national treasury. Some of the issues that I wanted to raise have been covered already, so I will try and talk to those that have not been covered by my colleagues. The first one is with regard to Limpopo, as far as education is concerned. The indication from the presentation is that with regard to giving kids to progress up to matric, Limpopo generally is doing okay. But the problem is at the level of matric, where the pass rate is always very low. They target 8%, but the performance, like last time, I think was at 62%. I just want to understand what could be the contributing factors, what are the reasons, is the department perhaps together with the provincial treasury doing something to make sure that this situation is turned around. My second question, again, I think in Limpopo, the indication is that with regard to delivery or provision of housing units, Limpopo is on track, but the problem is with regard to servicing, serviced or sites that have to be serviced. I think they performed at 59.5%. And I thought this is an area which should be given a priority so that these sites, once they're serviced, they can actually be made available for people to come in and build their own houses so that people don't have to wait for RDPs. No? Unless I don't understand this concept of fires having to be serviced. My understanding is that those who don't qualify for RDP, as well as at commercial banks, can actually come in, be assisted, and be able to contribute towards their own, to the building of their own houses. The other one is with regard to Northern Cape. Northern Cape has been able to build the state-of-the-art facilities, as in the R Hospital, the new mental hospital, the Kimberley Hospital that got upgraded. But the challenge is the operational budget that apparently is not available. And I'm just wondering, how is this possible? Does it mean there's no planning? Does it mean also National Treasury just give them money to say, yes, we can go and build without checking whether going forward these facilities will actually be of benefit to our people? Because as it is, we run the risk of having these facilities turning into white elephants. And the other is, I think my colleague, Mutashubi, Honorable, has touched on this one. This thing of appointing service providers or consultants to investigate irregular expenditure. I thought the irregular expenditure is something to do with non-compliance with supply chain processes. So what else do you indicate except to make sure that you effect consequent management? So please, can you just elaborate on this? And I think as the Honorable, my colleague has indicated, national treasury, provincial treasuries, in my own understanding, you are custodians of the supply chain policies, regulations, and the laws. So you should actually be exemplary in terms of making sure that there is action taken against those who flout the rules. In the Northern Cape, one of the challenges that you indicated, especially with regard to education, I think there was an issue of expenditure, over expenditure, is that you have to employ more teachers to respond to the increased number of learners. Yeah, the HOD is not listening to me. Yes, I was saying, in the Northern Cape, sure, you apparently had to appoint more teachers, especially after realizing that the number of learners had actually increased. I want to understand, how did this come about, the increase in terms of the number of learners? What is it that Northern Cape is doing that is attracting more learners? I'm interested in that part. Back to Limpopo. Congratulations for working hard to ensure that the economy in the province actually grows, as you have indicated, by 1.2%. We're here obviously with Northern Cape. They may want to learn from you as to what intervention measures did you do. Did you make to make sure that there is this growth so that we are able to also share with other provinces beyond Northern Cape? And also your achievement in terms of making sure that the compensation of employees is decreased from 72% to 68%. I just want to understand, how did you achieve this one? Are you keeping some posts vacant after people have resigned, have died, and all those things? Is this not impacting negatively on service delivery? Also on the establishment of special economic zones, I noted the progress that is being made, and you also went on to propose that perhaps there's a need for project manager or managers to be appointed. But I thought some few years ago there were actually teams, one for Musina Makado, the other one for Dubas, that were appointed to specifically make sure that these special economic zones are declared and are able to take off the ground, and they also have to make sure that the investment that is attracted. So I just want to understand, I mean, do we really need some more project managers about those teams, you know? I know there's one or two that resigned, you know? Maybe what we should be saying is that those positions must actually be filled so that there's more progress. And also in Dubas, I take it that there are no longer any serious issues. We are looking forward to the August meeting to have Dubas also approved as an ADZ. If there are issues, please let's communicate and see how we can assist each other. In Dubas, I think there's a need for provincial government to assist the municipality, especially on issues of spatial planning. For sure you know the place, you are very familiar with it. And I think there's general challenges there, lawlessness, there's some anarchy there, you know. So I think there's a need for you to work closely with the municipality to make sure that there is order, there is proper planning in terms of everything else. These expired drugs that have to be returned, how does this happen? Is it because suppliers in an effort to make money supply more than what is required? Does it mean there's no monitoring of these suppliers by the department? And whoever is responsible, have any action been taken or what? And 800 million over commitment, that is over committed by RAL. If you could shed some more light on this one, because I thought there is usually a budget that is set aside to the RAL. For this financial year, we are giving you 500 million. So whatever the CEO has to sign off, you know, has to be within this. If they need more, they'll come, please, and if you give them extra, then they will go and spend. So I don't understand this over-commitment of funds. No? And I agree with my colleague, Honorable Mutashubin, that on VPF, I think we need more information. We need to see more action taken against those responsible, especially because at some point we informed that National Treasury actually issued a directive to these municipalities to say this can be done. This investment into VPF is not allowed. No? Those who did it before then, maybe, you know, someone who can say, no, they didn't know. But after that circular was actually issued, I think people have to be taken to task, you know. They need to explain, they need to be held accountable. Chairperson, thank you very much.
On the matter of VBS, the Standing Committee on Finance is dealing with that matter this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're on this side. So if there are questions or matters you can't reply to now, you can send it in writing within the next 7 days. Honorable Terblanche and then Honorable Shabang.
Chairperson, thank you. First of all, welcome to the two delegations and you know, and the presentations that they made. Chairperson, you know, it is encouraging that we got a lot of positive feedback, and especially from Limpopo, and as you said, we have been working with them, and it's good to see that, you know, we are still making progress with certain, you know, small issues. My colleagues did already deal with the detailed sort of stuff, so I'm going to just, you know, tackle things that is still, you know, worrying me as well. Chairperson, to start with the Northern Cape, when I listen to you, and please, I'm not here to bash you or whatever, I'm just saying that I was a bit disappointed this morning. We had a meeting, and you were given a report, and you had to, you know, give us feedback on exactly your interventions that you did in the meantime. And, you know, the impression that I got is that you haven't really dealt with that. You know, the gentleman that did the presentation, you know, he spoke to us very vaguely. And, you know, in futuristic terms, we are dealing with that, and we are looking into that, and we are going to do that. And, you know, sorry, I've got a legal background. You know, I want the detail. You must tell us exactly what you've been doing. What interventions did you take, and what is the result of that? What is the outcome? You know, we can't be sitting here every time and discussing the very same things. Because the things are, Chairperson, what amazes me, and please, it's not only related to you. That is now a general trend that we are witnessing in here. People always, normally, spend all their money on personnel. They always underspend on goods and services in the main. There are always problems with supply chain management issues and specifically infrastructure related stuff. You know, the purpose of us sitting here is try to determine whether the money that you know, was appropriated is well spent. And really, you know, I'm really disappointed, to be honest. But let's leave it at that. I'm hoping that we are going to get better presentations the next time. Chairperson, I'm specifically, really, I am specifically concerned. If you take a province like the Northern Cape again, and you say that they have accumulated 10.5 billion rand in irregular expenditure, you know, and we are sitting here as if nothing has happened, I'm really concerned. Yeah, the same applies to Limpopo as well. You know, yes, we heard that we made progress there, but apparently we still have a problem there. And, you know, we would have expected, and really, and I know that, you know, my request is, Chairperson, through you, that you really get into that before it becomes a habit again and before it becomes uncontrollable, out of control. Chairperson, this, some of my colleagues made mention of that also. You know, this so-called implementing agents or whatever you want to call them, we need to do something about that. We cannot underexpend on infrastructure all along. People are, you know, they need the services. Lastly, Chairperson, you know, the two culprits remain. Being health, apparently health is not so healthy. And the other one is education, and apparently they are not so educated, or maybe they are not educated enough. I'm not attacking personal or people or whatever. But no, we cannot allow this. Apparently we are quite comfortable that this is the situation. These are our culprits, and we are quite happy with that. Chairperson, thank you. As I said, my colleagues covered the detail. Thank you for the opportunity.
Honorable Shpangu. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation. The Archter of Comwork and Dikra. In English, it is said, faith divorced from deeds is lifeless as a corpse. I think Mr. Shupin will agree with me because he's a Christian. You are very good in theory, but very bad in practice, both of you. Let us come to the acting of HODs. This is a bad practice. Why don't you employ permanent people? If you have a problem, you must ask for assistance. Advertise. The over expenditure and maintenance of schools. Which schools are you referring to? Because if you go to Northern Cape, even today, you'll find that children are still going to school under mat classes. And for an example, a child has just died 2 months ago, falling in the pit. But you say you are under a spending. 22% allocation to education is an insult. Remember that education is a key for the success of every child. But you allocate 22% to education. Education needs more budget. You must take it from Free State. Free State is bad in everything, but when it comes to education, it's number one. Supply chain is a cause for concern. What do you do with people with persistent irregular expenditure? Do you fire them? Do you take them to jail? Or do you say, ah, well, it's good, cadres, because they are cadres, that should be.
I know it, because it's under those provinces and under ANC. Consultants are a way of chowing money. I'm talking from experience. These managers' work is to do the very same work that is done by the consultants. Then you bring your own people to come and take money from the province and go and chow it. Something must be done. You said you lost 150 million in 2017-2018 in cooperative governance and human settlements, whereas citizens are up against your government with regard to services. This must be explained. I think there must be no performance bonuses for the managers with that regard. Children are still not having transport to ferry them to and from the school. But you understand. And yet you have a very good story to tell. When you go to former homelands, people are still living under terrible conditions and best health hazards. And you keep on saying all is improving. Chair, I suspect that is because of hiring unprofessional people and cadre deployment. Last but not least,
Chair, order. Order. Chair, we are dealing with issues that relate to the Northern Cape and Limpopo, the budget. If there is any cater deployment and all that, that any member can substantiate, I think it should not just be an accusation or an allegation. It must be proven beyond reasonable doubt, because the stigma that the honourable member is trying to portray is that we've got incapable people that are deployed by the ruling party, and I have demonstrated at the beginning of my address that we have a situation in Limpopo where it improved. And I talked about the non-racial nature of the party that I support, and it's supported by evidence given by the said the province. Now, you have Northern Cape. Northern Cape was never a homeland. And you're coming to tell them about homeland here.
Now. I would have reacted to that.
Sure.
You are entitled to your view on both, Shabangu.
Thank you.
But when you make a statement, you must give detail. Can you conclude? Because I'm going to react to what you said.
Thank you, Chair.
I know my problems very well.
Yeah, I said I'm talking from experience of where I come from. But most unfortunately, the Free State has not yet presented its coming. Last, Chairperson, how do you expect people to have acquire land to build houses if you are unable to save the land? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. As far as I know, there's no much schools in the Northern Cape. I've been to every town in that province for the past 19 years. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Northern Cape. There are excellent teachers, but there's also teachers that are not so excellent. There are public servants that are excellent cum laude, but in all provinces there are public servants
that can do better. If you want to look at the consultant's remuneration, just go to the annual report of a department in the financial statements, and that's where you're going to pick it up. Then you see what they earn. It's incredible. And that's the point I tried to make. Why can't we do it? Call in other people. Let's go and train our people to do it. You can read the book. The guy from Virgin Atlantic Airlines. The title of his book is Just Do It. Yes. Richard Branson. Go and read that book. I've read it a few times. Yes, we can do it. It's possible we can do it. It's a reality, honorable members. The budget, the current budget, doesn't have all the financial resources to address everything in South Africa. That's why the President, His Excellency Ramaphosa, departed on the CEO initiative, also appointing envoys to go and look for investors. Now that must be done in provinces as well. Don't leave it just for the President or these other 5-6 people running over the globe to get investors. Let's also engage with our people outside and say, yes, bring your expertise in. Come into this network that we can improve. Northern Cape, Limpopo, and then we will conclude with the National Treasury. I'm going to give you 15 minutes, and then it will take us to 20 plus 1. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Once more, I think you showed that you know the province very well. And I thank you for responding to some of the issues. Very tough questions, but let me attempt to respond to it. The most critical question was the question of the acting. The last HOD that was appointed permanently was left on in October 2014. From then, we were only having acting people. And I'm sure you know the procedure there. The HODs are appointed by the Premier, isn't it, using the EXCO. So we are all waiting for that to happen. But it is a serious problem. It is a serious problem. Let me not elucidate on that. But we hope that is going to happen before the end of this year. The local content versus the Northern Cape, South Africa versus Northern Cape, I'm sure we can't claim a space if we are not capable enough. What we are having is a project where we are supporting local and local SMMEs in order for those SMMEs to be ready when there's development that is coming. And I'm sure by now they are ready in order for them to occupy the space of any investment that is coming in order for them also to represent us well. The matter pertaining to Section 18, it's a very dicey one, Chair. It's a very dicey one, but I think I prefer to speak the truth here. The administrator that was appointed, there was a technical problem because there was a court case. The outcomes of the court case did not favor the administration. It favored the guy, and the guy was supposed to be reinstated as head of department. He was then reinstated at the same Department of Health as head of department. As a result, Treasury had to extend their mandate to ensure then that we are doing specific things. There's no specific administrator that is given a specific responsibility, as suppose with Section 18. We're supposed to be getting a finance person dealing with finance issues at that point. But at this point, Treasury is doing it all by themselves, putting systems in place, and at this point, there's no real improvement. On the issues pertaining to operational costs of state institutions, you would understand also if facilities are sponsored by national government. National government is supposed to be sponsoring also the operational costs. But for Harris Surti, for TR Hospital, for the mental hospital, we do not have the operational costs. But it's quite in our interest to ensure then that all these institutions are operating. You would understand Harris Surti is a hospital that was there already from Codonia. So about half to 60% of the current hospital is operating as per the operations of Codonia. But because of the nature of the hospital, which is the world-class hospital, we cannot find enough resources to get the hospital to operate 100%. One of those reasons is getting specialists to be appointed in our province. You advertise 116 posts. I know because I was at health. You advertise 116 posts for specialists. You get 16 people advertising, and half of that 16 is not even specialists. They are just applying. That's why you cannot really get to the 100% at some point. But we are trying through the Cuban project to get our kids more exposed, to get our kids specializing, and to get our kids coming back to the province to work. The same applies to the mental hospital because West End was there. We are bringing West End. But what we are trying to do as well is to speak to the neighboring provinces, like your Free State, like your Eastern Cape, to say, let us rather use this institution as an institution that Eastern Cape can refer people to, Free State can refer people to, and the Northern Cape. And I think we'll be finalizing that engagement in order for the hospital to operate 100%, because they will have to contribute as well. The same applies to DR. Central Hospital was closed, and DR moved, but obviously there's no money to operate it 100%, and we are trying to do that. We took a decision as the EXCO to say no other institution shall be built in the Northern Cape without having budget for operational costs. We took that decision, and the Department of Social Development were the first one to adhere to that arrangement. They opened a substance abuse center. It was built, and the operational costs were there, so it's 100%. So we are trying to correct it going forward, but with extra funding that may be coming, we are correcting the three other institutions. I think from myself, Chair, I dealt with a number of those issues that are supposed to be dealt with. The Smolinyana issues about the budgets, the amounts, and so on, will be dealt with by the staff. I think we've got the acting HOD.
They're very big, they're not small yet.
What is that? Oh, I'm sorry to say Smolinyana issues. but my team is here. They are going to respond to those major issues.
You've got 10 minutes left.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. I'm going to, I think because there's a lot of questions around irregular, I'm going to give this to the PAG just to give more detail in terms of what we're doing on irregular and what are the issues, just so that at least by the time we leave here, we've got an understanding of the issues. But on the health one, a quick one, we are working on a few streams in terms of our intervention in health. One of it, which I've mentioned in my presentation, relates to issues of revenue, where we've already appointed a few clerks there per facility to make sure that we can collect the necessary revenue. The second biggest issue is the issue of the structure, where we've involved the Premier's office now in that particular work stream that we're dealing with the structure. I mean, the last time health structure was approved was in 2002, and now we're busy trying to come up with a structure. They do have the people, but those people are not necessarily in the structure. So we're also working around that. That's another work stream that we're busy with for the Department of Health. The other work stream that we're busy with is also on the systems, on the information systems that they're using there. And as indicated in my presentation, there is a new system that has been implemented there to make sure that you can collect sufficient information on patient, first of all, to be able to have the patient information come the time of claims from medical legal side of issue, we will have sufficient information. But also then we should be able then to bill based on the information on the system. The other one is the medical legal part of it, where we've put together a team now that's sitting there in the Department of Health to look at the old cases that happen when it talks to medical legal issues, because some of them are like 4 or 5 years old, to gather the sufficient evidence so that when we go to court, we've got sufficient information to deal with those cases. The issue of the consultant that we're referring to, which is an additional resource, is specifically going to work on the irregular expenditure in the Department of Health, with the understanding that once they finish there, then the department that they've requested for assistance to deal with this irregular expenditure will then be able to use that resource. We don't have sufficient capacity to do those investigations because departments have been requested to do those investigations for quite a number of years, and they've not been doing it. And in health, they go back to something like 10 years back. So the administration that's there, the new leadership that the MEC was talking about that's there, they don't have all that information. So you need someone to go into the archives and put together the cases to say what actually has happened here and who could be responsible, if there's anyone going to be responsible for incurring that expenditure irregularly. With the understanding that most of the contracts in departments are actually signed by the accounting officers. So sometimes you are asking the same accounting officer to do an investigation around that particular contract. And you can see why there is some reluctance from the departments to then do the investigations. But once you get a set person from outside, it becomes so much easier because then you can get to the depth, then you can also identify if there's any people that were responsible for that particular irregular. So the PhD is going to take you through the cases, and then Bakang will just talk to the issues of the budget to say what's the reason for overspending, what's the reason for underspending in the other departments that have been mentioned by the honorable members.
Thank you, honorable members. I think with regards to irregular expenditure, it is indeed very true. It's a cause for concern for the province, because if one really looks at the bulk of the irregular expenditure, about 4 billion of that, especially for the Department of Health and Education, is caused by implementing agents, your IDT as well as your Department of Public Works. Now, the challenge that the province is having is that an accounting officer sometimes is actually asked to utilize these implementing agents. But for you to have your rep at any board committees, I think there is a case in Limpopo whereby I think there was a ruling to say that you cannot necessarily have somebody from a department that can actually sit in a board committee of another department. So it makes it very difficult in terms of the controls that you want to put in place. Because now even when you do the investigation, your internal investigation, it becomes difficult to tell another accounting officer to say that charge so and so. And that this is basically where we are sitting. Because if you look at the irregular expenditure that we were speaking about, the one of education, it was because of the IDT. Now, they did a preliminary investigation. They wrote to National Treasury indicating that from the Department of Education, there's nobody that we can really hold accountable in terms of the expenditure. Because the implementing agent is the one that contracted the contractor, but there was something that was just wrong. It might have been that the points were not necessarily correctly calculated, or there was just a mishap in terms of the process. But if one sometimes look at the irregularity, it's not very major irregularities. It's things that could have actually been dealt with, you know, at that point in time, decisively by the people that are responsible for that. Let me make a typical example. You know, the issue of quotations. You are supposed to have three quotations for amounts above 10,000 rand. It happens that the official only gets two. And instead of getting just a deviation letter from the accounting officer to say that we went out on quotation, but it was only two service providers that were responsive. As a result, I cannot have three quotations as the law requires me to do because I did open it up. Now you only receive two. But the most unfortunate part is that then the departments continue to just include this in the irregular expenditure and not necessarily deal with it decisively. And as a provincial treasury now, we are trying to get the departments to have preventative controls because most of these issues are managerial issues. If management at that given point in time was very decisive and dealt with the matter, we would not necessarily be sitting with irregular expenditure that is so high. Hence, I just wanted to say that out of that 10 billion, 4 billion of that relates to implementing agents. So what is it that we are doing? We have indicated that for public works and agriculture, you know, the department has did send application forms to provincial treasury. When you look at it, you would see that about 100 of those transactions were performed by a particular individual. They were correct. Other 100, very same individual, they were wrong. Then when you look at what the department says, they would say that nobody can be held responsible. Then you return it back to the department to say that, but it can be. Because if a person is the one that does these transactions throughout the year and only 100 of them are irregular, what went wrong? Now, when sometimes when you return them, they never come back to you as a department. So, like I think Mr. Mabija had said, there is also laxity from the side of the department to try and take action against the people that are causing regular expenditure, and it's true, consequence management is something that is actually lacking. We were, as a province, also counting on having the new treasury regulations that have been proposed to actually be passed, because if you look at some of the contents there, they indicate that when the accounting officer fails, treasury can actually instruct that the person be charged or even the accounting officer be charged for a wrong transgression. Because then that would actually give us leverage from where we are sitting as provincial treasury to start taking action against those people that are doing the wrong thing. So if one looks at what is it that we are trying to do, and I think like Mr. Mabija had said, we said that let's start with a health intervention to say what is it that is really causing irregularities in the system. And we see that the supply chain management unit, I think in the past what happened is that it was not properly capacitated with the people that could actually do the work. And with the introduction with a lot of prescripts relating to supply chain, you then realize that the people that are actually in supply chain need to be upskilled because supply chain is very regulated. And if you don't keep abreast with the latest developments and you miss one, it's going to result in irregular expenditure being incurred. So as a result now, what we are saying is that from provincial treasury side is that we are going to try and assist the departments in terms of those ones. Like, for instance, we've mentioned the Department of Transport Safety and License because in that case, the irregularity mainly there is because of the learner transport, because of the roads that they had to, or the routes that they had to undertake. Because if you look at the rural area, you'd only find out that there's about 4 taxi owners. And those are the only people that can actually, you know, transport the children from wherever they are to go to,
the school or wherever. Now the process that needs to be followed, unfortunately, it was not necessarily followed because they were saying it's only four. Now those four are the ones that are going to get the contract because you can't get somebody from Kimberley to transport people in Kuruman, whatever the case may be. It must be people, and I think it also supports what the NEC was saying in terms of localizing, to say that we need to make sure that the people that are there are the ones that can actually do that. So in terms of the one of the Leonard Transport, we are trying to look at the merits of the case because there was some sort of like an investigation that was done by an accounting firm whereby they said that even if you could go out on tender, you are not going to get anything different because of the manner in which the market is. It becomes very difficult for that. So like we are saying that we are looking at the merits, and once we are happy with that, the irregular, we will apply to National Treasury to have the irregularity being condoned, because what we are saying is that there was a study that was undertaken. And then in terms of the Department of Public Works as well as the Department of Agriculture, we have given our submissions to National Treasury. We went to National Treasury to say that this is a bulk of the cases that we are having. Now, the Office of the OCPO then gave an indication of what is it that they require, because you see the department tried to club everything together, but now what they were saying is that they would want, when the application is made, it should be made, you know, per financial year, so that they can be in a position to see that, you know, for 17-18, this was the irregularity, so much, the department applied for condonation for so much, as a result, this is how much is remaining. So we said that we will go back, and we are currently busy trying to have the application in the form that they are requiring. But like we are saying, we are really working very hard now with the department, because now this is a priority project to say that we can't continue incurring irregular expenditure. It has to come to a stop. And this matter is also now even elevated because we are saying that at an administrative level, this is what we think. And I think we also need a political backing to ensure that ultimately there will be consequences for any irregularity if there is a need to do that. And I think there was also mention of the CETA issue. We also have CETA that has caused some irregularity because, yes, the department followed the process. But just because they did not get CETA involved, that became an irregular expenditure. But now if you really look at the value for money issue, you would actually see that the departments spent less by going the normal procurement route, unlike if they had to go through CETA. Because, like, for argument's sake now, when you purchase computers using CETA, we are told that you are only getting an empty computer. It's just a computer, a shell. Then you have to go out again and purchase the software. But when we follow the normal procurement processes, you would actually request that you get a computer together with the software so that by the time it arrives, then you've got a document or you've got a tool that is, you know, ready for use. But now because we have to follow CETA, we are sitting now with the Department of Cogstar that ordered that, and they had to cancel the contract because they said that if I had to go the normal route, I would have received a computer that got the software. Now you're giving me a computer that has nothing. So what do I do with the computer? It means that now I must go through another process of trying to get the tool to be operational. So there are certain things sometimes that are making it a little bit difficult, you know, for us to follow them to the latter. But what we are saying is that we need to follow them because, unfortunately, it's a law. And laws are there to be followed. So these are just some of the challenges that, you know, we are facing, and ultimately they are resulting in the irregularities being increased. And like we are saying now, we are taking a very decisive approach in terms of really working with this irregularity. We hope that next time when we come to the Portfolio Committee, it will be a totally different, you know, different picture that we will be painting to the committee. Thank you.
Professor Rekwa, please take note of this. You must write this down. Esther Solani, make a huge note of this. We can't leave it here. I'm convinced we can't leave it here. Sir, can you wrap up? I'm going to give you 4 minutes. I know there's a lot of issues. But we're running, we must be in plenary at 2 o'clock.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I just want to respond quickly to the issues of understanding. If we can just go quickly to slide number 18 of the presentation, you will realize that most of the departments indicated by the Honorable Member, that understanding is in relation to compensation. And the acting HOD did indicate that because of the moratorium, most departments got it, were sort of challenged in terms of appointing certain posts. But what we are doing now, we are reviewing the moratorium so that at least we include time frames. So that if a department requests to, for example, fill a post now, it takes about 2 weeks. That comes to Treasury and OTP. But currently the process is sort of unregulated in terms of the time frames, which delay the departments. So hopefully when you come next year, we'll not have this scenario. So all of those departments, Honorable Members, the understanding is directly in relation to compensation. The other issue with the learner growth in education, I think this was a sector issue across all departments of education to say that up to last year, departments were using SNAP survey, which was information that only became available in January. And it was a bit problematic to link it with the budget process because you will remember that January, February, we are forming the numbers, and then this huge spike will come in terms of the learner numbers, and that was to a large extent anticipated. From this year, we have National Basic Education have introduced LURAS, which is a tracking system. So that one is more accurate, so I don't think in future we'll be able to have this jump that is unexpected. And the problem is that that jump only happens in February. And like I'm saying, the problem is that even if we have money at a given time, it's difficult to then incorporate that anticipated jump into the budget process. So with this LURAS in future, I think it will also assist us in terms of planning. Because sometimes it's not necessarily a money issue. It's a planning and synchronization of the budget. The other issue is just a correction from the Honorable Member. Our education share as a percentage of budget is 36%. It is not 24. It's ranging between 34 and 36 as Northern Cape. Thank you, Chair.
Suzanne? Yes. Thank you. Tampopo.
Thanks very much, Jefferson. I'll try and go through this very briefly. The Honorable Member's issue about illegal mining in Limpopo subsists beefed up that quite significantly. I'm sure you're aware, Chairperson, that there was a terrible incident in the middle of the year here where that bus was burnt and those seven miners were killed. There's serious gangsterism happening in that area, just around the mining and everything. The staff says beefed up the manpower there significantly and they have the necessary intelligence operators working in the area. But I can give a more of an update report to the Honourable Committee if you allow me, just to give that up to speed. As far as the land by Costa, the Hawks have investigated that transaction. We're just waiting for the final report. So it has been investigated. We're just waiting for the final report that will be given to the HOD. We will then give it to the Premier to activate it. So it's been done. I think there's going to be some serious consequences after that particular act. About VBS. Chairperson, just very briefly, there are seven municipalities in Limpopo that invested in VBS. Bembe District Municipality, 300 million rand. Fetahomo, Greater Tuwase, 210 million rand. Greater Giani, 158 million rand. Lebele Ngumbi, 151 million rand. Collins Chawani, which is a new one, 122 million rand. Ifram Mogale, 82 million rand. And Makaro Municipality, 61 million rand, which makes up the total amount of 1.2 billion rand. What we've done, Chairperson, is that I've written a letter to the HOD instructing him to appoint forensic investigators who will then do the following. They'll look at who, from 2014 to date, who invested, how much was invested, the date of the investments, what interest they got, and did they get any payouts. The second thing is how and why did these municipalities take this decision? Did this go through council? Which official signed off this decision? What remedial steps did the municipality take after receiving the instruction from National Treasury that they mustn't do it? Was this decision contrary to the MFMA, which you know it was, and what are they going to do if it was contrary? Who should be charged? And did any municipality official involved or councillor get a kickback? We want to know all those things. So those are the terms of reference, and we'll respond to this committee as and when. As for As far as unexpenditure goes, Chair, I'll start with education. Education, there was an under-expenditure of 155 million rand. One of them was ICT. They put out a tender, but they didn't get the appropriate service provider. School furniture, there was a problem with printing orders. Remember, honourable members, we're just putting a logger system into all the departments now to try and manage the budget and supply chain. So they had problems with the actual printing out of those, and some of the orders were printed out very late. So that was one of the reasons. Educator training was also one of the reasons we didn't. The service providers delayed in the submission of the invoices, so we didn't get the invoices in time. The agency item for the feeding scheme, this item was underspent once more because of the non-submission of invoices. And then learner teacher support material, some of the invoices once more came late, honourable members. As far as transfers and subsidies, there was an under expenditure of 28 million rand, and this is because schools didn't meet the requirements. Remember, I mentioned earlier on that we've met the norms and standards now, but we can only give schools that money if they comply to various things, like giving us their bank statements and their finances so we can see that they've used the money accordingly. And then payment for capital assets, we gave them money, honourable members, to improve their connectivity. And once more, there's a challenge with CETA here. So they weren't able to spend any money because of the involvement of CETA. That's education, Chair. As far as health is concerned, there was an expenditure in health, Chair, and there was an expenditure of 5.1 million rand, and this was due to the health facility revitalized grants, which they've asked us for a rollover, and we think we'll be looking at the rollover in the new financial year. The non-negotiable items, there was an unspent funds as a result of the following: essential equipment and maintenance of equipment. There were delays in the delivery of equipment for these, with which these funds were earmarked by provincial treasury. What we're trying to do here, Chair, is we're trying to get every health facility, clinic, to have all the appropriate medical equipment. So when you go there, you can test blood pressure, you can test all those necessary things. They underspent there, and then there was also underspending in infrastructure, non-infrastructure maintenance, and invoices were only received during March 2018, Chair. Transfers and subsidies, there was under expenditure here of 52 million rand, and this was essentially around transfers to institutions, NPOs, non-profit organizations, and then some litigation cases weren't finalized. As far as safety and security is concerned, this was funding for community policing forums. Some of those policing forums weren't up to speed, so they weren't funded because they didn't meet the particular criteria. Chair, as far as compliance to the supply chain management, we've put in very strict rules now. We report on supply chain management issues on a monthly basis to the executive. One of the issues that we've been very clear on, there cannot be any variations. If there's a variation in supply chain, it must be signed by the executing authority. Otherwise, it becomes immediately irregular. Because we found, and I'm sure you've experienced this, is that a lot of officials just continue to do variations on supply chain. So now we've been very clear. No variations unless signed by the executing authority. The executing authority will then say why he or she has signed this variation and what it was for a specific reason. So we are very serious about this matter. Matric pass rate, Honourable Monageri, we're just making sure that we give them enough money. We've met the norms and standards. We're delivering, we're giving them money so they can deliver learner teacher support material. You remember 2 years ago we missed all the schools. Now we're making at least the schools are getting their learner teacher support material, and we're ensuring that our infrastructure is up to speed. We can only do that as Treasury, ensure that we fund them appropriately. We've just got to hope that educators get trained more regularly so that we can indeed improved pass rates. As far as the service sites are concerned, there's been, since the Tobatsi issue has happened, honourable members, and that's not just the first one, by the way. There has been this consistent increase of price of land. As soon as a municipality says that they're interested in buying land, the price of that land goes up like immediately. So we are aware of it, and it's also the necessary planning. So we're sitting with the particular chief director who's in charge of this particular program to ensure that the planning is appropriate so we can identify that land that needs to be serviced and that we can spend that money as soon as possible. As far as the economic growth is concerned in Limpopo, remember, honourable members, we're very linked to the world markets because we are a primary economy, and we're very involved in mining. As soon as the mining prices go up of a particular commodity, the economy starts going. Although when it comes to the agricultural sector grew significantly in the last quarter of the last calendar year, and that was particularly because of the Rand-Euro relationship as well as the Rand-Dollar relationship. Farmers made an enormous amount of money from exporting, and this also had an impact on the driving of the economy. What we've done about the COE reduction, we have told departments no appointment of back office individuals. The only people that we appoint are teachers and doctors. That's it. There's no appointment of a PA because I want a PA, no PAs. That's not happening. It's a fact. Look, we take a lot of flack for this, but, you know, when you're spending 68% of your budget on COE, our return of investment must be something that we can see. So we're not very popular. But what we've done as well here is that this personnel management framework is no longer managed by us, Treasury. We spread it. What we do is the beginning of the financial year, we look at all departments, their structure, which posts are funded, and then we say, right, you can appoint these people. Off you go. So it's no longer an issue. It's you guys at Treasury. So this is something that has taken time, but it's evolved, and we've got to that point now where we are. As far as project managers and SEZ, again, Honourable Monakedi, what we found is that government officials don't do things quickly, and with all due respect, I'm not saying this facetiously. I'm just saying that you know as well as I do, if we don't spend the money, that money goes back. So we've given 100 odd million rand to this SEZ. We're seeing that the process is taking so much time. We thought that it would be appropriate that we appoint a Smolanyana project management company to run this, and with all due respect to Smolanyana, I guess. So we think that will make this money get spent appropriately, and we don't want to get overtaken by events. We know very well the Chinese don't know Saturday, Sunday. That's wire, wire.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, we need to be in place, otherwise we will be overtaken by events. When we look again, the SEZ in Mogado and Mutino will be run by the Chinese, and we'll be nowhere. So we really need to be very serious about how we're going to do this. So we are considering this very clearly with Mr. Kopong and Mr. Mpatlele, who is the CEO of LIDA, and we'll see how we manage that going forward. Yeah, I think I mentioned Tuvazi and the spatial planning. We are involved in improving and assisting them in the spatial planning there, but we need a lot more concentration there because at the moment there's a bit of chaos in Tuvazi. Because you've got 38 mines that are pumping, and you've got another 8 mines that are coming on stream, it's a huge thing. And then the demands from the communities. And then you often will get a traditional leader aligning themselves with the mining house, but not necessarily assisting the community. So it's very dynamic, and it's how we manage that thing going forward. But we do believe that we've got our finger on that pulse. Expired drugs. We have to do a lot more work on the whole issue of issuing of drugs. The question comes to mind, honourable members, is that, well, what drugs are we buying? Is that what the health issues are in Limpopo? Are these drugs actually appropriate? Why are we getting 6 million rands back a month back of expired drugs? Are we buying these drugs just to put them on a shelf and just to lie there? So a lot more work and a lot more research is required. Yeah. And this is where I think, Honourable Chair, we need to sit with the National Department of Health so that we can understand exactly what's happening here. What are health pressures in Limpopo? Is it necessarily the same as Gauteng? Is it necessarily the same as the Northern Cape? I'm not too sure that it is. So we need to do a lot more work there. But as you would know, we're a bit thin on the ground when it comes to expertise because you really need a very clever people to get in there and understand exactly what's happening. The other issue is that we have a very, very poor pharmaceutical depot. Internal audit went into the in-local inspection over there. We found drugs underwater, and we need to do a lot more work there. This particular building belongs to LIDA, and we've asked LIDA now to actually now improve this building, upgrade it. So we hope that's going to happen going forward. As far as Rao is concerned and the overcommitment, that was exactly the case that we asked this particular CEO. How can you overcommit when you haven't got the money? Even if the MEC writes to you and says to you, I was at that community and we promised to build that road. You write back to the MEC and you say, hey, Chief, there is no money. We can't promise anything. So that's the issue that we're dealing with going forward. It's not easy. Believe you me, Chairperson. Communities go to public works and they sit outside public works and say, yeah, Marlitsipilitzilovelina. So these are the things that come up all the time. And we've got to try and manage one. It's a real political thing. And us guys that are in that space, we've got to go there and speak to the communities and say, gosh, we're coming. There's only so much money. So these are the things, and you know, sometimes we try and, believe you me, Chairperson, it's not going to get easier going into 2019. I agree we want to be popular, né? So it's not going to be easy going forward. There will be more progress given to the honourable members on the VBS issue, but as I've said, we are investigating, and I believe that we need probably, Chairperson, to have a longer session with you to talk about municipalities. And we need to do that pretty soon. Our municipalities, some of them are tabling budgets that are not funded, and we know the issues in the municipalities. We've got a really, really good team in Limpopo, but they're under a lot of pressure to try and keep these things going. Let me just give you an example in the municipalities, just very quickly. In all the municipalities in Limpopo, all 26 municipalities in Limpopo, they don't have one asset manager. The whole asset process is outsourced. So, you know, surely we could save money. I mean, being an asset manager is not a very difficult thing. It's hard work because you've got to go and count these things, but there are systems there. Chairperson, unauthorized and irregular expenses, we can only stop this by carrying out the consequence management and stopping the variations. Because most of this irregular and unauthorized expenditure happens in the supply chain space. And again, we're trying to curb this practice by insisting on reports on a monthly basis. Particularly now that we have changed the supply chain management prescripts and we're insisting that most procurement happens from black companies, black women companies, black youth companies, MKMVA companies, township companies, rural companies. So these kind of things, we've insisted that we get a monthly report on whether we're spending 9 billion rand a year on goods and services. Are we actually driving the economy? And this is something that we actually have a responsibility to do as a provincial government. I spoke about variations and what should be done. The Honourable Member Shibangu from the Free State, good in theory but bad in practice. Sometimes it's not like that, Papa. Sometimes it's very good in practice and bad in theory. Yeah, so it's vice versa. But it's in order. Our allocation for education in Limpopo is 46%. In fact, in education, often crowds out other expenditures. Yes, there is a cause for concern in supply chain management, hence our very strict interventions there to ensure that the departments comply. The return of 150 million rand to the National Department of Housing is not acceptable. We have now sat with the department and insisting that they actually plan. The demand for housing is extraordinary, and we can't accept that we, on an annual basis, because it has been pretty much on an annual basis, we send back 150 million rand. We have to ensure that those service providers that are on the ground, on the construction sites, actually do have the capacity, and we've seen it. We've had this going forward. As far as transporting of scholars are concerned, that is a discussion that we need a lot more time to do it. We do give the funding for it. However, in Limpopo, we have a challenge with bus services. Our own bus company is pretty much on its knees. So although there is that funding and that subsidy for scholar transport, we do find that we do have some bus companies that can't play the game. Honourable Chairperson, I think I've covered most of the questions. And if there is any detail that you need, the HID and the DDG are next to me. They can give you more information. Thank you, Chair.
I think the MEC did a good job in replying. Treasury.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll start with the question from Honorable Mutlashuping about the rollover condonement. It's not really condonement. Well, provinces have applied for rollover the money that they could not spend in the previous financial year. We met with all of them last Friday on the 25th of May. So they kind of know at the moment exactly what we are likely to approve. So what we're going to do is we are waiting for the submission of the expenditure report in line with what they are submitting to AG this Thursday, because they submit their annual financial statements. So we want to use that kind of information, because even though it's pre-audited, but it's not like preliminary like the one we had at this expenditure we are presenting today. So that is close to almost final number. And then in mid, the intention is that by mid-June, we'll let them write formal letters to say how much each department is getting in terms of rollover, because those rollovers, the money already sitting in the provincial revenue funds. So because we don't want to delay a situation where provinces said, I could not spend again because the rollover process was indicated late. So we want them to start preparing in advance for that money. With regards to the issue of the regular expenditure that was highlighted that National Treasury could not condone, as much as the guideline says you can recognize, but the fact of the matter is PFMA is very clear about the roles of the accounting office and the responsibility, that they must ensure that effective steps are taken to ensure that irregular expenditure do not occur. So, and I would think that the Northern Cape executive can learn from Limpopo to ensure that the MECs are getting involved, that the variations like the MEC tool was indicating that the executive sign on that, because now if we just continue, because some of this irregular expenditure of Northern Cape has been left there for a long time. So I think really that something needs to be done so that people are held accountable. In terms of the other issue of, we have noted the issue of the transversal contract that was raised, and I would say that, Chair, that it's not the first time in any case Limpopo found, even with the stationery for learners, they did found, and the office of the CPO is clear that in the event that the department is able to find a supply that is cheaper than transversal contract, you are allowed to source from that supply. That has already been indicated. So, but we'll raise it with them to say that they need to look into that to ensure that whatever transversal contract they put there give them maximum economies of scale as it's supposed to be. And then the issue of CETA also was already noted. It will send it back to the relevant offices. Thank you.
Thank you to our two MECs and the team. The teams, thank you, Mrs. Kareko. We are also having a representative here from the AG's office. There she sits quiet at the back, making a lot of notes. So we will call the AG when we come to the end of the series of meetings with the Treasury. Other members, this is the law. We call it the PFMA. If you don't comply with this, you are trespassing. Then there must be a consequence. Not may, not if. There must be a consequence. And all the former AGs told us this in presentations the past 9, 10, 15 years. Then it's up to Parliament, what are you going to do? If we can address public entities, like you see what has happened, then we can address departments to comply with us. It's our responsibility. Secondly, it was mentioned, capacitate the department with people who can do the work. Some of you mentioned this. That's the crux of the matter. When you appoint someone, that person must be capable of doing the work. Finish and clear. When you get into an aircraft flying back to Johannesburg or Kimberley, you trust the pilot. He's been trained to fly this thing. Yes. You put all your trust in him or her. There's two of them up front.
That's the point.
That's
yes. Monitoring and evaluation must be strengthened. It's very clear to me. This thing about medicine, or whatever you call it, that's old. Why? Someone didn't do his or her work. There's no other excuse. Spinnies and Clark. Who didn't do his or her work? We want to know that. Call that person. Chief, you don't want to work? There's the door. You can leave. Yes. Yes. We can't carry on like in the past. Forget it. You can only spend the money you have. If you keep on spending and spending and spending, my bank manager is going to call me. He says, Sheldebeer, what are you trying to do? Yes. We can't spend it with money we don't have. It's crazy. It doesn't make sense. Honorable members, thank you. Tomorrow is the appropriations with the spending on the basic education infrastructure grant. So you can see what's happening. On the Tuesday, we meet treasuries. On the Wednesday, we go into preparations on the spending of the conditional grant. And this is the cycle we will conclude the end of June. Next year, our term of office of 5 years come to an end. So, Lonnie, we will have to create some space that we, before we end this year, before the NCOP rises, not Parliament, the NCOP, that we call these treasuries back and give a hand over to the incoming Select Committee for Finance and Select Committee for Appropriations. Honorable Motlashupeng, you want to conclude?
No, Chair, no, I'm not concluding. I wanted us to meet in committee immediately after our visitors have left.
Yes.
Please.
Do so. Thank you for the staff also arranging this meeting. Mrs. Karekwa, also to you and all the other visitors. Thank you. The committee members, please stay behind. Please stay behind. It's a request of Honorable Matla Shupi. Northern Cape, Limpopo, travel safely.